tape, so you're being recorded. So, Tanner, don't say anything you wouldn't say in front of your grandmother.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, fuck, man. Shit. Bruh.
You know, I notice I talk really slow. Even sober, I talk slow.
No, you talk like a stoner. There's just no way around it. It's just how it is. You're going to have to accept that.
Yeah, it's a cadence. Get right. over it. It's a cadence of your people. Be proud of it.
Harry, you don't want to start that.
You know, be proud of it. Let your freak flag fly. You know, it's okay.
Where's Harry even at? Do we have separate but equal
recording
studios? Oh, yeah. I should put up the TV.
Do you guys care about seeing Harry?
I'd prefer not to. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, put him up there.
We'll be here in Wakanda. Put a face to the voice. You colonizers doing?
Wakanda. Wakanda forever.
It's okay. I always call Newcastle White Conda. You know, get it. I think it's funny.
It was funny the other day. Everybody was wearing those cheesesteaks, and I was like, "Harry, you know they make chicken cheesesteaks. They're not fried, but they're still chicken."
Yeah, his joke was so racist that nobody got it, and I just like stared. I was like, "What? I don't get it." And then I was like, "Oh, because Harry's black and the chicken's not fried, though. Oh, okay, you racist little bastard." Oh, you kids. You kids and your racism. Tanner, tell, why don't you and Harry talk about the pool party? Did you guys have a good time?
Dude, I had a fantastic time. What about you, Harry?
Yeah, it was an excellent time. There was a dog that was wet, touched everybody.
Everybody is wet once I got there.
That dog needs to be put down.
Which one?
Well, the one that's on everybody. Bullshit.
What's his name again?
Garth. Jeremiah's dog.
For some reason, I was thinking Jerry. It would be kind of funny if Jeremiah had a dog named Jerry. Mm.
Oh, man, the Babylon Bee. Video games blamed for sudden rise of hastily constructed abandoned forts across the nation.
Interesting.
It's a Fortnite joke.
So I didn't even get in the fucking pool. I got my swimming trunks on, and I was easing into the pool, and as I was getting into the pool, everybody got the fuck out. It was like somebody put some sort of poisoning into the pool and caused everybody to just run. But the good thing about that is I didn't have to change. I just chilled in my swimming trunks all night and ate some fucking cheesesteaks.
Not everything's a personal attack, right?
I didn't eat a chicken cheesesteak. It's a regular Philly.
They're all good.
They are all good.
All of them.
J-Bolt's.
Little plug right there. J-Bolt's.
Hey there.
Hail and Kill Caller, you're on the air.
First time caller, long time listener.
Let me log in. Go ahead, caller, you're live on
I'm
here.
About to do my podcast.
I just want to know, what is the deal with, you know, those people? You know them.
Before you go any further, what, is that beeping in the background? Is that a smoke detector right here?
Great. No.
Good.
Sure, I just heard another beeping.
Nope.
Why Spangle the only one that doesn't wear a headset?
All right, let me text you.
Because he's got an implant.
Because I got. It'll take a couple minutes to log in.
He's a robot.
So I won't keep you waiting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll let you know what's up. Bye.
Big business here. Big business.
Big business. Captain Business.
Why aren't you here, Harry?
Yeah.
Because it's a Wednesday and I don't go that far south on Wednesdays.
Where you at, Gary?
No. Well, I want to be Gary.
How much farther north are you?
Do it look like I've been shot?
No comment.
I have never been shot or shot at. I want to get the, I want that on record.
You can, you know, I can't say that.
Harry, I meant to talk to you. I want to get your gun people on the show.
My gun people?
Yeah, at the Lawrence place that we went to.
Okay. Oh, you want to see, you want to see if you can get them on the podcast?
Yeah, I'd like to talk to somebody who sells guns just to, you know, see, hey, what's real, what's not, that sort of thing.
What do you mean what's real or what's not?
Like, I don't know. I don't think people ever talk to people that sell guns or whatever, so I want to talk to them. I just want to see, you know.
I'll sell AKs and AK accessories.
That's what you're going to get out
of. I'm doing like 10 things right now, so I'm not thinking totally clearly, but you know what I mean.
I could probably get you somebody on here that sells guns, but they'd have to be wearing a ski mask and you'd have to alter their voice.
I like those guys. I talk to them. I know them. And they're Harry's guys.
Makes sense.
Right, Harry?
What?
I would call them Harry's name is
my guys. I give them money.
They are your boys, right?
No. I give them money. They give me guns or places to shoot my guns.
It's Chris Spangle and Moving Targets.
Yeah, your name is triggering me. Your nickname's triggering me.
That's my handle.
This is my deepest fount.
That's one of my few handles I got left from the early 90s shit that I could still use and not have to worry about statute of limitations.
This is my handle. This is my spout. Here, na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
I don't remember any of the rest of the lyrics.
I don't either.
Like,
I don't
this one, I have for the longest time. I think I was playing like CS Source or something like that when I first got this handle of Moving Target.
What are you sipping on, Harry, and why are you holding the cup backwards?
It's tea, and I can hold this cup any way I want to hold this cup.
I'm just curious.
Okay, he just told you to fuck off, pal. Said, this is my cup, and you can go screw yourself. This is America.
Yep. Fought hard to get this pineapple cup. Yep, it is a black tea. No, it's not Earl Grey. It's just a simple black tea.
No milk, no sugar.
Who the fuck puts milk in tea?
A lot of people put milk in their tea.
Milk and tea?
Yeah, it's those like Indian teas and stuff.
No, fuck all that.
Shit's fucking crazy. My brother drinks that. No. I like my coffee.
When I worked at Taste of India.
I forgot you work at that fucking Indian restaurant. I like my coffee like I like my women, ground up.
What the fuck? Son. Are you mentally retarded?
Round up women. I mean, that was a big jump, dude. That's a big jump.
Yes, sir.
This is going to be a rough episode, Tad. I almost called you by your real name.
Today, Junior.
I still have yet to hear Tad Western's real name. I don't think. I think it's Tad fucking Western on his birth certificate.
It's not.
It has been changed.
You changed it from Tad Western?
No, I. Yeah.
Did you legally change it?
Yeah.
You're legally Tad Western now?
Yeah. You want to see my, that ID is not, but my passport is now.
Yeah.
You changed it from Tad Western?
That would have been a great fundraiser, though.
Did you legally change it?
Yeah.
You're legally Tad Western now?
Yeah. Do you want to see my,
I don't know. Why does it sound like a,
what is that on?
It's on Spreaker.
That's the compression.
That's why it sounds so weird.
I don't know. I just threw out a word that sounded like it was something to do with audio. It's been a long time.
It sounds since legit.
It's been a long time since I've been behind a microphone.
I bet I've got, you know, a longer of an absentee streak than you.
Probably.
If I do really well tonight, I'll be allowed back on Boss Hog.
I don't know.
Jeremiah sent me a...
Jeremiah runs a tight ship.
He really does.
Jeremiah sent me a good luck note earlier today.
Did he?
In a text message.
Nice.
It was like... It was basically, don't fuck up or you're never allowed on my goddamn show.
Good.
I'll have to serve the rest.
Kindly words of encouragement.
I've spent 2 years in emotional prison because I've not been allowed on Boss Hog. And Jeremiah basically just sent me a text that said, all right, buddy, here's your fucking chance.
You got one shot.
Whenever I read it, start playing Eminem in my head, you know?
Yep. Lose yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Mom spaghetti.
Yeah. Mom spaghetti.
This is fascinating radio.
You're touching my spaghetti.
Hell, I see the fucking vomit on Harry's sweatshirt already.
I see the ratings. They're going up.
Oh, we're already on air?
No. Well, I mean, we're recording Patreon and streaming, and I'm just getting some stuff set up.
Charging people to listen to this shit.
I hope those three people are happy.
God, can you fucking imagine? Well, I'm so sorry.
Sorry, Christy.
Spangle's fucking pocket just keeps getting fatter.
And yeah.
Listen to us talk about nothing.
You can't imagine. Just fat and fat and fat.
I'm ready to talk about Dylan Roof.
God. This kid. I want to talk about Dylan Roof.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to We Are Libertarians, and I'm Chris Spangle, and blah, blah, blah.
I like your normal voice.
No, you got to listen to it on 1.25 to hear me actually talk.
You do have a 0.75 speed.
I just talk like this.
Well, this is cumbersome and annoying.
What are you doing? Are you doing your taxes?
I'm doing my taxes. That's right. I'm just.
That's what he usually does.
Taxes. Oh, man. I've got a funny story about taxes once we start this show.
Did you pay him?
Nope. Well, actually, it was a guy I was doing that flooring business for.
I'm doing my taxes. That's right.
And I called him and I recorded the conversation. I've got it on my phone. I can play it on the air. And he tried to say that I never worked for him, so I sent him a recording of us talking about him not paying his taxes. I was like, there's your fucking proof that I worked for you.
See, you shouldn't say that stuff out loud. Yeah.
Sorry.
Legal cases and all.
Yeah. You know.
Oh, no. I already talked to my lawyer about it.
What'd he say?
You were there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was there for
that. You were there.
I thought you meant like again.
Well, I was screwing with him the other night. I called his number and then hung up real quick. And then said, sorry, I pocket dialed you. And then I texted him some real lewd sentence. And then he called me and I denied it and then asked if he pocket dialed me. And he's a preacher.
The irony there.
And he's preaching.
Okay, well, see, here's the problem. I was testing the audio, and we all stopped talking. So
you looked at us like we were in trouble. Like, yeah. Holy shit. I was like, all right, the show's over, boys. I'm heading back to the ranch.
It felt like I was going to the principal's office.
All right, so if you're listening, we're just about to start the show. Holy cow. We are just about to start the show. That is Harry at a remote location. Please hold up a newspaper. We are live in the Facebook group. We're live on Spreaker. Everybody will now be able to listen to the show live and call in on the following number, 317-795-0329. If you missed that, you can check out our social medias, and you can grab that at the We Are Libertarians Twitter. And we're going to go live on Tuesday nights and let you listen in, and you can call in. If you are a patron, we now are streaming back to the Facebook group like we intended, like God intended. So you got to pay $10 a month if you want to watch the live stream and chat there. So that is now back in the Facebook group for everybody, everyone's enjoyment. Okay, I am just about ready. Harry, how are you doing today?
Going good. Are you actually ready?
I am actually ready. Yeah,
Harry's remote from his remote location.
He looks like he's playing with himself. What are you doing?
No.
No, stand up.
Just standing up here, and all right.
The setup kind of looks like a red porta potty.
It really does look like he's in trouble.
Yeah. Your battery's been kidnapped by a 1980s paramilitary group.
And on this video angle, we'll put the video up on YouTube afterwards. But on this video angle, you can see my feet. So if you're a foot person, you can watch this and jack off. So, I know.
In better shape than Antonio Brown's feet.
Did he get his? Who was the player that got his fingers blown off?
Oh, that was Jason Pierre-Paul. That was
okay.
Oh shit!
That was due to that was like years ago. Fireworks on 4th of July.
He's still a Pro Bowler.
Yeah,
I think he's still playing. But yeah, Antonio Brown went to a cryotherapy chamber without the proper footwear on him. Frostbit off the bottom of his feet.
That's no joke. I did that. I did that once.
And the season starts in like a month.
That chamber is cold as hell.
Is that not right after he got traded to the Browns?
No, he's in Oakland. Yeah, he hasn't played. Practiced or anything yet.
Of course not.
All right, let's get started. Let's do the intro. Let me start recording the video, actually. Need to do that. There's a lot going on now. There's just too much going on.
You just need one button.
I need the producer or something, but they'll be stupid and mess it up.
This meeting is being recorded.
Producer Paul.
All right, let's get back to some boring subjects.
Understand the risk to our country.
Freedom brings people together.
You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Hey, that's my turn. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This is episode 363, recorded on August 7th, 2019. My name is Chris Spangle. I'm the host. Got a cast of characters tonight to talk about very serious subjects. The one and only Tad Western is in the studio. Tanner Perdue is back.
Yes, sir.
A guy named Kyle. Quiet. That's a guy named Kyle is here, who made a great first impression. And then Harry is on the phone, is on the Zoom. So we'll get started here in just 1 minute.
Warning. Warning. This show is for adults, produced by semi-adults. So the language is sometimes strong and offensive.
I don't know what I said.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, where our goal is to help you sound smarter while talking to your friends. We examine current events from a libertarian perspective while treating modern politics with all of the irreverence it deserves.
There has been lie after lie.
We toss out the screaming heads, put people before political parties, and give context to the news to make you think. Now, here's our host, a 15-year veteran of politics and media, Chris Spangle.
Hello, everybody. That is me, Chris Spangle, here on the We Are Libertarians Network. We finally added all of the new shows to all of the directories. So go to any directory and just search We Are Libertarians and you'll see all our shows. The Swamp Explains, Genderarchy, Libertarian Politics and Policy, The Boss Hog, Tad Talk. You'll see all the shows in there, all the ones that are going, and then Tad Talk. And to subscribe to the whole bunch there, or you can go to WeAreLibertarians.com. But that is not why we are here. We are here to have fun. We are here to possibly make love. But first, let's introduce everybody just so we're on the same page. The lovely and effervescent Tad Western is back. Tad, it has been quite a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Mr. Spangle?
I am. Listen, it's show night. I get tense. I get irritable.
You're pretty stressed out.
I'm gonna take it out on our next guest, which is Tanner Perdue. Tanner, how are you?
The one, the only. I'm here, and thank you, Chris Spangle, for having me on, and thank you even more to Tad Western for being here.
Yeah,
you're welcome. It's my pleasure. I'm just here to keep you two apart.
Tad started screeching about the shootings, and I was like, just come on in.
No, I wasn't screeching. I
needed somebody who actually has been on 8chan before, and I know you've been on. So that's why Tad's here. Harry Price, the one and only Harry Price, is on Zoom. Harry, how are you doing?
Going good, going good. Sitting here in the my other studio.
Now, you attempted to be an hour late because you were feeding Gunther, but... I was like, just zoom in. I'm like, I'm not waiting for you. And then it took me twice as long to set all the equipment up. So yeah, very long. So if you're a patron, $5 above a month, you get like 15 to 20 minutes extra as we're kind of sitting here and I'm getting set up and everybody's chit-chatting. You get that bonus content as well as extra shows. And so, Harry, we get a long one because it took me forever to get this new setup going. But Harry has not been kidnapped. He is not sitting in a red porta potty. He is not, he's just up against a black red curtain with some very harsh lighting, and it looks like he should hold up. He's holding up a newspaper. all right, good. I just wanted to make sure that you have not been kidnapped by the Viet Cong.
No. I'm safe. I actually kind of like the red curtains. I tried to use some piece of staging, and everyone's upset. Now, the lighting, I haven't set the lights
up. You look
yet.
Good. You look like you're getting ready to go on a ski trip or something.
Right. You do.
That toboggan.
The air set at 65 in here, so you really picked a good night to not come in.
Oof. Oh, that's too cold.
Are you guys cold?
I'm comfortable.
I'm doing all right.
All right, good. Now, that other voice is Kyle Orr. Yes. Is that how you say it? I haven't said your last name. You're going to have to talk right into the mic. Right. Like, you can move it if you need to, but you need to look like you're pretending to make sweet, passionate mouth love
sweet,
to that microphone.
Sweet love to the
right.
mic.
So I'll turn you up a little bit. Kyle, I have never met, but he...
Yeah, that's the first time.
Yeah, he is a Facebook friend of mine.
Yeah.
Shares pretty much everything, comments on pretty much everything.
I try to be pretty active on there.
All right. Yeah. Even closer to your mom. Like, if you got to, like Tanner, show him how to do it. See how Tanner is? That's how I want
you. This is better.
That's perfect.
Yeah, check.
All right. There we go.
Yeah, that's better. See, we don't edit here. I live mix everything. And
absolutely.
So that's why you get everything in the mix. So... some people are more professional. Johnny Rocket has a damn near 7-hour production every week. I don't do that. I have 17 jobs, so we live mix here. Kyle made a great first impression. He walked in. He said, "Hey, what's up, man?" And then proceeded to destroy my bathroom. It was like Hiroshima in there.
It was disgusting. You know, I tried to tell him to do it.
I apologize.
At Culver's.
Yeah.
He managed to order a triple. Bacon cheeseburger, butterburger.
Yeah. Well, he had to make room. Apparently, couldn't hold. Are you lactose intolerant? Is this?
No, man, it's just all the soda, dude.
All right,
too much sugar.
Have you ever walked into a stranger's house and just immediately lost your bowels, Harry or Tad?
No, but I did walk into a shop in Nashville, Tennessee, and they had a private bathroom. But I just walked in and
well, that was a shop.
Up. Yeah, I mean, no, but it was a private bathroom, and they were having like a little church group thing going on in the back,
man.
And it was it was bad.
A quote on the way over here was, "Hey, you don't think Spangle will care that I blow up his bathroom, do you?" I swear to God, that's a quote.
Premeditated terrorism is what
that is. A quote. That's a domestic terrorism if I've ever seen it before.
Yeah.
So you just
premeditated.
Hi, my name's Kyle. I'm going to destroy your bathroom.
He is
there
not.
Has been one positive though. I haven't seen the cats in a long time. I think they might have suffocated.
Yeah, they're dead.
Cyclone ass came out of gassed the cats to death. You were not the first. You're not the only person to do that. The other person that did that was Chloe Anagnos, the beautiful, lovely beauty queen who is a fantastic writer and of such stature now. But back when she was around us, she was just herself, and boy, I love Chloe. All right, lots going on in this episode. We're going to talk about the shootings. We've got a ton of great prep from our research team, specifically our research director, Sam Schultz. And Sam, by the way, if I say it's Schultz or Schultz and I say it wrong for the last 6 months, please make sure you correct me. But so we're going to give you the details on exactly what happened, because the thing that I think most people find in this particular situation is that they hear there are shootings and they have absolutely no idea what's going on. You know, they're all white supremacist or they're all liberal or it's all used for as a political football. So we're going to give you all the details on exactly what is happening and maybe talk a little bit if we have time tonight. Talk a little bit about why somebody becomes a shooter. If we don't get to that, we will do that on Saturday. Now, on Saturdays, I'm going to... Listen, I've made no secret that my goal in life is to eventually have my own talk radio show. And I started in 2004 at a local talk radio show. I work in talk radio now, albeit a comedy format, not a political talk format. And I, a few years after leaving that local talk station, started this podcast as a way to kind of just keep my chops up and talk about issues and have fun. And so I need to get accustomed to actually being quick and on time and keeping to a schedule and a format. And so on Saturdays, I'm going to be practicing that. So we'll be doing essentially the Chris Spangle Show live on Saturdays, usually around noon. So check for the We Are Libertarians Twitter. You can grab that live link. You can hear it live. You can call in, interact with us. And we're going to start keeping the phones open. So if you want to respond directly to anything we're saying on the show, listen live. You can watch it live in our Facebook group if you're $10 a month and above patron. $5 a month above patrons get all the bonus content and all kinds of goodies if you go check out our Patreon. And let me thank everybody. I want to make sure that I grab the new person who just joined Patreon. I did not write down. I normally have notes on this stuff, and I have not updated it with the brand new person, and I greatly apologize. See, smart people, Tad, would not say that. Like, hey, I have not memorized the new person's name yet.
Well, honesty is always the best policy.
Exactly right. I'm not a great broadcaster yet.
Unless it's going to piss somebody off, then you should just always lie.
I'm the world's okayest broadcaster.
They truly deserve an episode of Tad Talks.
They do. Why have you not been doing Tad Talk, Tad? You literally haven't worked. You haven't been doing shit for
about
a year.
Well, I haven't
now.
Been doing work. What are you, my wife? I've been doing things. There's a lot of things to do around the ranch.
You have
now. I technically might not be compensated with monetary gains from it.
You feed your dog. You feed your dog pepperonis, and you go work out, and that's all you do. And then you go talk to boomers at bars. Like, don't give me this.
Hey, it's a lot of work, man.
Don't pretend you do shit.
Boomer time. It's a lot of work. You know, I mean, I think I woke up at 2 o'clock this afternoon.
Harry, please change the battery in your smoke.
I told you. I told you.
That is not me. That is Harry.
I told you.
You have children.
He did say that.
You're going to burn your house down.
How do you live having that beep in the background and not drive you crazy? What
I noticed that 15 minutes ago, and it still hasn't been changed.
All right.
You don't have a 9-volt? Come on. Take one out of that headset, that fancy headset.
It's tradition to have that thing going now. It's been going for so long. I think, if you listen to any of my first podcasts, it would beep in there. Like 10 years ago, when I first started podcasting.
It's called a fucking fire hazard. Mr. Safety.
It is still beeping.
Mr. Safety comes over here every single time and is like, oh, you need to make sure you lock this down. Your internet is not secure. Why don't you put a bar on this door? You haven't changed the battery in your smoke detector?
It's the one in the basement.
Yeah, okay.
That's where the most fires start.
Exactly. Where all your equipment is. What are you doing?
There's another one in the other room next to the first.
All those plugs, Harry, like, all plugged into one outlet.
It's just my son's fire hazard. It's just my son's room.
Right.
Yeah.
We don't need a smoke detector in there. You know, one of my favorite conversations I've ever had with Harry was him talking about how he could turn anybody's internet off. And how he could make my internet the most secure motherfucking broadband there ever was.
And it was that classic. Sounds like a fascinating conversation. I
almost fell asleep, but it was fucking awesome.
So, all right, thanks to our patrons, the lovely Christy Avery. I just want to give a shout out to Christy Avery. She's just, I hope that at some point in your life you have a friend as good as Christy Avery.
Amen.
Just like my friend Lex, I posted about them yesterday. They're just great friends who always support our work, support me. Just really happy that Christy Avery is not just our friend, but also a patron supporting our work. I just did a bonus episode, on exactly where our Patreon money goes and what we're using it for. So if you're like, hey, I want to give, but here's where your money's going. Here's what we spend it on, and here's all the growth, and here's the libertarians that we're creating on a daily basis. Like, think about shaving off some of that Libertarian Party donation money and putting it towards something effective. So Christy Avery and Craig DaCosta and Jason Doolittle, they've been longtime $100 a month subscribers, and we really do appreciate it. And creeping in there is the Libertarian Coalition and our buddy Donald and everybody over there at the Libertarian Coalition. Their goal is to bring libertarians and people together around ideas, so make sure you look up their Facebook page. Jeff Bennett is our new patron. Thank you so much for joining at the $100 a month level. And Ed Brehab, our buddy intern Ed, such a good guy, and we're so happy to have him supporting the show. So thank you guys for being patrons of the program. You know, I'm going to read the $25. Listen, I know it's early, and there's a lot of these, but these people deserve recognition too. It's not just the $100 people, but you know, the $1, $5, $10, $25, $100 people. They really do make a huge impact, and all this growth that we're going on undergoing right now is really because of people like Josiah Shrewsbury, Andrew Bowman, Paul Jonathan Eads Jr., Ryan Lindsay, Liberty Memes. Yes, that Liberty Memes supports us. Ray Wolf, Mario E., Rob Place, Reinhold, Catherine Iverson, Richard, The Liberty Extract, Michael Schultheis, Joshua Sexton, Jacob Klingensmith, Rick Irvine, Carly Ernst, Brandon Kester, Heidi Aldridge, Dan Dunbar, Christopher Brokoff, and Amazeus, a.k.a. Todd Singer. So thank you guys so much for supporting the program, and we really do appreciate everybody who keeps this running. So before we begin, I want to talk about something a little sensitive, and I think it ties into the subject. It's personal, and it is something that Tanner has wanted to come on and address for a very long time. And I do think it kind of feeds into the broader topic that we'll be discussing tonight. You know, Tanner, how old are you?
I'm 22. I turn 23 like next week.
Pull that mic. Just tilt that mic up for me, please.
I'm 22. Okay. Turn 23 like next week.
Okay, so you're a young man. You've lived a hard 22 years, to be honest.
I've lived all of them.
Right. Yes, especially the last few. And a lot of discussion is going into, you know, what is basically lost young men. And why do they turn to certain things?
Right.
And Kyle, you know, we haven't really done a good introduction of you, but feel free to kind of jump in as Tanner's friend as we go through this and just say, like, hey, from my perspective, X, Y, and Z.
Oh, God.
I'll give you a better introduction than, hey, he shit in my bathroom in a minute.
This dude clogs toilets.
Right. So you obviously you sound like a stoner. You have a stoner's voice. You do not use any drugs, correct?
Not anymore, no.
Right.
Although I will say right now, I miss my marijuana. And I'll get it back.
Dad, do you believe that?
Once this 10 years is
up. 100% I believe it.
Yes, so one of the best episodes we ever had was our 420 episode with Tanner James Neese. I think it was 2016.
Is he still alive?
Yes, 2016, 2017.
And that's the last time I was on.
Yeah, well, maybe I think the next one. But Tanner had a great episode where we talked about drug legalization and then Dog the Bounty Hunter's wife.
Yeah, and I just want to give her a shout-out real quick. And, you know, I heard they were exhuming John Dillinger's body. And I've got this crazy request.
Where's this going?
They exhume Beth the Bounty Hunter's body so they can figure out how to give every woman her tits.
Okay, stop. And so, great episode. And so I invited you back. And what I didn't, like, I have never used any drugs, and so I'm not around drugs. I'm not sophisticated when it comes to any of it at all. I thought on your next appearance you smoked too much weed. And you nodded off a little bit. You were kind of falling asleep. You were acting weird. And, like, I was just like, man, the edibles really fucked Tanner up bad.
Right.
And it came, you know, and a few, I don't know, weeks, months, or whatever, you said, no, I was doing more than weed.
Yeah.
And so what were you doing? And I know first it's important to you to apologize. You've apologized to me and I've accepted that. And, like, you were going through something, like, you know,
and
I felt bad that you were even on once I found out what was happening, because the goal is not to ever use you as a character. I mean, we're all about real people here, and I felt terrible about it. But, like, you know, because people kind of messaged me after going, like, hey, that wasn't weed.
Pot.
You should check on your friend. And right. So we kind of behind the scenes talked to family members and stuff and said, yeah. Hey. I didn't realize you had a serious problem.
It was very serious. And you know, it was one of those things that I have a really messed up body the way it is. I've got a spine issue with my back, And at the time, I was dealing with an ACL reconstruction surgery, I believe, at the time. And, you know, I would use every excuse in the book. You know, it was this, it was that. But until you wake up and you cannot get out of bed without having some sort of drug in your system and you're a slave to that chemical, you don't really recognize how serious your problem is. And honestly, being on this show was a big wake-up call. Not only to me, but people around me, because I remember I had a doctor's appointment the next day, and I went in there, and he had seen the episode, and he was about to fill my anxiety prescription. And he said there was just no way that he was going to let me on that, because he knew that I was going to misuse it.
Mm.
And, you know, and I used all of those ailments, quote unquote, that I use them as an excuse to get messed up. And, you know, I'm really torn between the whole disease versus choice argument, which I don't believe people are born destined to get screwed up in life. But at the same time, I don't think some people realize how bad off they are until they wake up with a needle in their arm, you know. Which, you know, March 22nd is 2 years, so it's not an issue anymore, thank God. But it took a lot of serious help to get where I am now, compared to where I was at the time. So
you started because of the pain. You started on opioids, and then it ended in heroin. Is that kind of the trajectory?
Well, I started the 2015. I snapped my arm in half in a jiu-jitsu competition, and I was prescribed 120 milligrams of hydrocodone every day. I would take 3 Norco 10s when I woke up every morning, 3 at lunchtime, 3 when I got home, drove home from school, and then 3 before I went to bed. And then the doctors cut me off cold turkey. And then I couldn't find the hydrocodones on the street. I could find the morphine. And the morphine was a lot easier to find. It was a lot cheaper, and I wouldn't get sick from it.
How would you find it, and from whom?
I'm not going to snitch on my drug dealers.
I mean, but like, was it clinics, or was it just like private?
It was street dealers.
Okay.
It was street. Right. It was.
Why did you two start laughing? But like, what are you, a fucking cop?
God damn it!
I'm an arc. I'm not going to say who or what who I was buying it from, or I can tell you the price I was buying it at. But I mean,
let's hear it.
100 milligrams of morphine, which is pretty much milligram per milligram, the same as hydrocodone if you take it by the mouth. About a dollar or a third, 30 cents a milligram. So about a morphine 100 would cost about $30, whereas a hydrocodone 10 milligram would cost up to $7. And I just, I wasn't able to find hydrocodones on the street. I ended up graduating to morphine, and then when I couldn't find the morphine, there was a heroin dealer, and I ended up meeting the heroin dealer, and I tried it once, snorted it, ended up getting hooked like a fish, absolutely hooked on it, and then I ended up putting it in my arms.
How long did that go on?
Honestly, it didn't go on too long, because I would have died. I can still see the look on my mom's face, because there's a period there for about probably four weeks or so, where she knew, I knew, everyone knew what was going on, but I wasn't willing to accept that fact. And then there was just one day I ran out of money. There was no way I was going to get well that day. And that's when I just decided to stop. I didn't go to rehab. I locked myself in the room, told my parents what was going on. And I've always been a mama's boy, I'll admit that. You know, I just locked myself in the bedroom and dealt with the withdrawals. And about four, I think it was 3 or 4 days later, I was outside smoking or something. And it felt like something just hit me in the chest. And I started crying uncontrollably. And something just, you know, told me everything was going to be okay. And it was like a spiritual awakening in a way, as crazy as that sounds. And it's weird because the day before that happened, a friend had asked me if I wanted to go to church with him. Mm. I was like, there's no way in hell I'm going to church. I'm withdrawing right now. I'm trying to get off dope. And the week after that, I was at church. And I still go to this day. I got baptized on July 1st of 2018. And it's one of the best days of my life. So at this point, I can look back on that and say it was a wild ride, and I wouldn't change it for the world, because I learned a lot about myself, and I learned compassion for others.
Do you still struggle? I mean, do you still struggle with your addiction?
Every great while, there will be like there'll be something that sneaks up on you. And it's almost like a bee sting. Real quick, it'll just come up on you and just tap you on the shoulder. And it's just something you have to block out. I relapsed one time about 6 months in on morphine. Not with heroin, but with morphine, which is equally as bad. And I've done every drug from A to Z. I've literally done everything, and it's such a sensitive topic to a lot of people, because pretty much everybody knows somebody that's going through it, and you don't realize how bad off you are until somebody else says, hey, you're fucked up. Mm. Or sorry, you're really messed up.
Yeah.
And That's when I really realized that I looked down and saw the mark on my arm and knew I had to make a change or I would end up dead.
Do you think that it was just that it's like you still weren't so deep in it, but you were kind of cognizant in the beginning that you just were like, I can't let this go further. Like, this is serious shit. I mean,
he was aware.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kyle.
He would mention that he would want to stop, you know, but it was hard. I mean, obviously it's hard when you become dependent upon it just to get out of bed.
Go ahead. Okay. You're good.
And he'd mention it to me often.
More directly into the mic, though.
And then finally he did it, which, you know.
So what would he say to you?
He wanted to stop. He really wanted to stop. He struggled with finding the, the fortitude to actually go through with it, you know, cause it's such a difficult, like he would have to lock himself in his room and, you know, and then that's what he did.
I mean, how many days did it take for you to get right?
Well, see, during this time that we're talking about, Kyle actually lived at one of the most toxic places I've ever been in my life.
Really? What? In what way? Was it because of his shit?
My roommates. Oh,
okay. His roommates were also...
See, I tried to make a joke to lighten the mood, but they were... No, but, so your roommates just were selling, well, dealing, well, what?
Well, I don't want to get into too much, yeah, but let's not do that. They were...
Oh, fuck those guys.
Well,
honestly.
They weren't helping him, you know?
Right.
They weren't
helping anybody.
You know, if you see that your friend's like really struggling, I mean, you wouldn't want to, you know, give them more dope.
Right.
You know?
But you also don't want to sit there and see them suffer.
Yeah.
And coming off of an addiction,
it's not good to be around people that are doing, you know, the same shit. Yeah.
It's completely impossible, almost, you know? Like, just that feeling on, you know, if anybody out there struggling with it, if you can put 2 days together, you can do it.
Right.
And at the end of the third day, if you're on opioids, you're going to make it. You just have to convince yourself that you're strong enough. You know, there's
this fucking show. It's like the most serious, one of the most serious episodes in a long time.
Yeah, and then
fucking,
you toss a cat across the room like a cam girl.
I'm sorry, Tanner. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
You're fine. Yeah. But, you know, I just want to be that person that I wish I had at the time. At the end of the third day, you can do it. You just have to just tell yourself that you can. Surround yourself with positive people. Stay away from the toxicity of others. And, you know, make sure that you have friends that have your best interest in mind. And at the time, I didn't have that.
So what are some more ways that you've kind of supported yourself as you've worked through this? What should people kind of look for in terms of, you know, there may be somebody listening right now who's going through this or, you know, even love someone who is struggling with opioids, you know, who was more in the Kyle situation. What are some ways from both of you that what are good ways to support somebody in that situation?
I mean, I was more on the receiving end of the
Let me start here. Kyle, how do you deal with it emotionally, mentally? I imagine you just wanted to beat the shit out of him sometimes. You just wanted to go, dude, you're fucking up. Like,
tell the guitar story.
But then there's other times where you're just like, it's a tremendous amount of empathy. Like, how did you handle having a friend on opioids, wanting to help him, but knowing he's just being he's in the disease right now. He's stubborn. He's not listening.
Well, I know that if someone's on drugs, they're not going to help themselves unless they really want to help themselves. So
absolutely.
I try not to take like I try not to be pushy with it. You know, I just give the best advice I can. And, you know, I just told him the way I quit cigarettes, I just quit. Like, I had to make a choice to just quit. I told him, if you just got to quit, you got to want to do it. If you don't want to do it, you're not going to do it. And it's that simple. And I just told him kind of the same thing he just said. You know, I explained it differently. I just used like a shit metaphor. I told him, you know, you got to pick the people that you want on your ship with you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want anyone on there that's drilling holes in your life and wanting you to sink. You know.
And so when he was ready, you being a loving, empathetic person, just saying, hey, like, not shaming him for it, not judging him necessarily, just saying, here's how I did this, here you can do it, encouraging him, and then when it was time, you were there for him, and he knew he could reach out to you. Is that fair to say, Tanner?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. But at the end of the day, it wasn't Kyle's decision.
Yeah.
Kyle would have been friends with me whether I was strung out on heroin or not. It was my decision. It wasn't my parents' decision. I could have slung dope my whole life and made myself get by that way. But that's not how I wanted to live. And after others started pointing out to me what was going on, it made a lot more sense. And, you know, it's easy to get torn up in this argument. Is it a disease? Is it a choice? It's really, you know, I think it starts out as a choice that turns into a fucking disease, because nobody wants to wake up and have to stick a needle in their arm or snort a line or take a pill. But at the same time, you know, everybody makes that initial decision whether the doctor gives them the prescription or they buy it on the street.
Right.
And it escalated very quickly for me. And I think all this Suboxone, all this is just bullshit. It's just as addictive as the original opiate. I think that I don't think the NA or AA, any of that is really that important. I think you have to find a spiritual...
Narcotics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, that stuff.
Right. Okay. I've never been to a meeting in my life. I've had good friends. I've had bad friends. And that's what's going to determine your outcome, is how you surround yourself with people that you decide to.
Yeah.
So if I'm going to go hang out at the trap house, I'm probably going to go do some dope. If I'm going to hang out with people that are like-minded, that have similar hobbies that I truly had before I got into it, such as music, you're going to find me playing guitar, singing. That's what I do today. I play music.
I think that's kind of relatable to a lot of the mass shooter subject and the white supremacist and ISIS. And like, It's a lot about what is the group of people that you're going to start surrounding yourself with, making that early correct choice.
Absolutely.
You know, I think in any situation, it's like choosing to lurk on some of these websites and entertaining certain ideas that you know, like, this is edgy. I mean, it leads to a dark place, going to places that you know you shouldn't go. I mean, everybody has those choices. That's what I find so amazing about, like, the gun control argument. You know, it's not about, like, it's about young men turning to violence, and which is kind of what we're going to talk about. Or people who use drugs or whatever. There isn't a person on the planet that doesn't struggle with something and has to make the choice every single day.
Absolutely.
If you're a married man, are you going to engage with that girl on Instagram? Are you going to slide in that DM like when you know
damn
you should? Right. You know,
ThoughtSlayer 69.
Are you going to make that joke to the coworker that you kind of know you shouldn't, but maybe she'll get the hint? Like, help me. I mean, other stuff, like, everybody struggles with choices. You know, for me, it was always emotional eating, it was overspending, you know. I don't feel very good about myself right now. Am I going to go to Cracker Barrel and eat 5,000 calories, or am I going to pray? Am I going to go for a run and exercise?
Absolutely, yeah.
What, you know, everybody has, you know, you have coping mechanisms.
Absolutely.
And you choose good coping mechanisms or bad coping mechanisms. Go ahead, Harry. I forgot you were here.
Oh, I was saying, like, everybody has something to reset themselves, whether they got something constructive to reset themselves or something that's destructive.
Right.
Some people play video games. That's why some people, the first thing they come home, they want to play some video games, because it's just something they can do that's a little bit mindless to let them meditate.
Yeah.
Okay? I was like, well, they're just mindless doing that. Well, if that's how they meditate, let them meditate that way.
I actually just read an article that, like, some of these games, like, you know, I play Clash of Clans and I play Fishdom, which is
Oh, you play Clash?
Yeah. I have for, like, you know, 10 years or I really like
I'm on there too.
What is
Ragesaurus Rex?
Ragesaurus Rex, that's a good name. Kingdom Rush. Those mindless little games like that or Birds.
I love Kingdom Rush.
They're supposedly better for stress release than Calm and Abide and some of these other apps that are built for stress relief. Which I found interesting.
There's nothing better than shooting people for stress release digitally.
Wreck somebody's
life. That was a joke. We'll address that later at the staff meeting, Tad. Yeah, Harry. I mean,
digitally.
Harry, everybody's got good coping mechanisms and bad coping mechanisms, and it really comes down to everybody lives in a moment-by-moment choice of, are you going to choose the decent path, or are you going to choose the path that indulges your inner, your base self?
Shadow.
Right.
Yeah. And the other coping mechanism, like some of you use, is alcohol, which it shows also, like, Tanner's whole, like, journey. If he would have been addicted to alcohol, locking yourself in a room would have killed him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, changing yourself is really hard, and people shouldn't take that lightly. I mean, it's Tanner's in the bathroom, so I'll say nice things about him. I mean, it's very difficult what he did. Right. I mean, what kind of things did you do for Tanner through the process of getting off of it?
I just kept telling him he can do it. Positive reinforcement. Try not to say anything negative. He really kind of fell off the map for a little bit.
Trying to not say something negative, I think, is key there.
Because I didn't want to, like, discourage him, because I knew it was going to be hard.
Right.
So I just try to remain positive. And, you know, he disappeared for a while, but I knew that was going to happen. And then how long did it take you to get a hold of me after that? I think it was soon after.
A couple of days. I went through the withdrawals for...
I mean, like, after...
See, heroin is it...
After your withdrawals.
Heroin and morphine both. Morphine's a little bit longer lasting drug than heroin. Except if it's in your veins, but if it goes intravenously, they're both very fast acting drugs.
Yeah,
you don't feel them for a long time; they exit quickly. And I mean, the withdrawals last. The worst of it's over by day four.
Mm.
You're still gonna feel depression. You're still gonna feel like shit.
Didn't you come over right afterwards? Like. 21st Street.
There's no way. I wouldn't have been able to.
I honestly can't remember the first time I seen you afterwards.
But I remember after those 4 days were up, after the day I was outside and something hit me in the chest, I was bawling uncontrollably. I couldn't say anything, but there was a million thoughts going through my mind. The day after that, I remember waking up, walking out of my room, feeling fine. And my mom was just talking about how much it just looked like life had been restored in my body. You know, I'm not trying to sound like
color in your cheeks and
right.
Yeah, right.
Where
I wouldn't describe you as peppy, but peppy for you, maybe.
I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. No, I want to ask you about the after, because you know you were at the party and you've been trying to get on for a while, and I personally didn't want you to come on because I didn't, and I know that the Boss Hog guys are of the exact same mind that we don't want this or the attention that this brings to do anything that might cause you any kind of harm. But after kind of talking to you a couple times, I think it was almost like making amends, like you wanted to come and make amends to the audience because it was really important to you to come and do that. And I think it was personally very embarrassing and you wanted people to know. Now, so you know, like audiences are so fickle and turn over and pay so little attention. Right, like yeah. People barely remember the co-host that I had for 250 episodes, you know. So I wouldn't think too much about that, but... I feel that you are having you're struggling a little bit with being perceived as an addict or having been a drug user, or I think sometimes you think that our circle is judging you, that your friends are judging you for what you went through, when in reality we have nothing but empathy. Like, because
I mean, you're right. I mean, like you said, you thought it was too much edibles. I mean,
I didn't know.
You've never touched drugs in your life.
Right.
But over time, it essentially turned into a character. And
well, yeah,
it was a character that I embraced.
Yeah, you have a pothead voice.
Right.
And you smoked pot. And it was kind of like, oh, Tanner's eyes are red. What, did you get stung by bees? Do you need Benadryl? Like,
yeah.
Because you were, I thought you were just high on drugs. It's a funny joke, right, Ted?
I mean, really.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a bee. So
every time I would do a podcast, I would just go and get as loaded as possible and come on the air and have a good time.
Yeah. Which is honestly why we haven't had you back on, because we don't want to do anything that causes you stress.
Right. Oh, I was not under any stress. I can promise you that.
Yeah, we know.
I didn't feel a whole lot of anything.
Yeah, I didn't feel a whole lot but itches and giggles.
I just want you to know that nobody in our circle, and I've talked to pretty much all of it, nobody's judging you or thinks any less of you. They're all proud of you. There's no like negative consequences, really. I do think there are things that you did during that period that made some relationships a little tense, and you have to work through that. It's just the reality of it. It's like, you know, I have been a complete rage. Like during my divorce, when you're in pain or you're in a stressful situation, like you do things that you regret and you act certain ways that you, like I look back at certain points in 2015, 2016, and I am so embarrassed.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Like I'm just so embarrassed by some of my behavior in some of that period. Not, you know, like it just was grotesque. And I really do like, sometimes think about putting all of the shows before the last 50, for instance, behind a paywall, because like I don't want that version of myself out there.
Well,
I mean, how are you dealing with that a little bit?
Well, people still talk about that episode to me to this day.
Yeah,
and you know nobody wants to be seen going like this, you know,
right?
Falling asleep on the microphone and you know talking a bunch of nonsense, and you know, like you said, I just got to make amends with this audience. 3/4 of you probably don't know who the hell I am, but the quarter that do, I want you to know that I love you.
Yeah.
And you can do whatever you want.
I have not taken that down because Tanner has said not to take that down.
Don't take it down. Go so, watch it right now.
So if anybody's like, why isn't he, that's why. Tanner wants it to stay up. And I honestly think at this point it's an important part of your story.
Absolutely.
Even though it's embarrassing.
It was instrumental. And yeah. In the recovery of myself, because then after that happened, see, I remember all of us went out to eat after that episode, and they were going, they were just confused. They were like, how's he getting home? I remember them discussing it. I can't tell you where we ate at.
Stack Pickle, I think.
I mean, I don't know. I just remember the conversation of how I was going to get home. And it was one of those, you know, oh, don't worry about me. I'll be all right. One of those deals. But truly, I had no business on the road.
We genuinely thought, well, you said, I'm just going to sleep it off in my car. We thought you were drunk and high. And that you were going to take a nap in the Stack Pickle parking lot till you sobered up.
See, I don't remember saying that.
Yeah, that's kind of what the discussion was.
It's just a fucked up story.
Yeah, I'm proud of you, and I'm proud of you for, and I know that it's not been easy, and I know there's been moments where it's just kind of like, man, it's got to be really hard for you. It's, how has it been on your family? Like, how do they feel about things now? Are they overprotective now?
Oh, absolutely, definitely, they totally are. And during this time, Boss Hog was just a baby.
Yeah,
it was just starting up, and I was on the very first episodes of Boss Hog. And if you go look at those episodes, you'll see the same thing that you saw on whatever episode I was on here.
Yeah.
Maybe not as intense, but it was still there, you know? And now, Newcastle's such a small town. It's almost like I just have to let everybody know that I'm okay. Because I think at that point, nobody really expected me to be here very long.
Yeah.
And now I didn't expect on being here very long.
So let me ask you this, like, kind of the, maybe the motive, like, did you have a messed up childhood? Did you grow up, like, as far as I know, your parents are together, like, you have good parents, your dad, I saw him the other night, like, he's a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem to me that you have a drug problem because your family life was a mess and you had all these, like, I mean, where did you start falling into drugs and why? Like, was it just you were 13 and fell into a bad crowd and everybody, was it literally the gateway? Like, how did you fall into it?
I mean, it was your classic gateway story. It really was. I ate my first Vicodin. I was probably 14.
No.
14, 13 years old. I drank my first beer when I was in second or third grade.
What the hell? How?
I was actually staying the night at my friend's house, and his dad drank Coors Light, and he was a general manager at CVS, and he had a beer fridge that was always stocked to the brim with Coors Light. So,
was it Tad your uncle?
No. I don't drink Coors Light.
I'll call him out right now. His name is Ron McGinnis. That was the man's name. He was general manager at CVS. And
he did nothing illegal having beer in his own home.
He had no idea.
Right.
Well, he caught us a few times and thought that it was my friend's older brother. And then, we got into the marijuana. And I'm not trying to make this fucking reefer madness bullshit, but if heroin was legal, I would have never got into it, I don't believe. Now, the pain pills, I mean, it was over prescription by the doctor. If medical marijuana was legal, I would have never fallen into this trap, I don't believe. I kind of feel like I fell into the pit that they dug for me. I mean, it's nobody's fault but my own. You know, it's not their fault that they think that Vicodins are the cure-all for pain.
So.
Yeah.
It's just not. It's a Band-Aid. And
did you, and I don't know if you want to answer this, but did you buy all of your pills from the street, or did you go to doctors or pill mills, or, I mean, what was your experience? Because you hear about doctors who overprescribe, and there's just these clinics that will dole it out no matter what you want, and they're making money off of it, and they don't care who they kill. And we should note that Tanner is from a rural Indiana county. And Tanner's town and county is like a lot of America, if not most of America. You know, so his experience, I think, is probably fairly common. And in this small town, I mean, were there places like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There were the pill places. I don't know.
Don't give specifics.
A certain doctor in Henry County, his medical license is suspended right now for Medicaid fraud.
Right.
And that, he got away with some other stuff. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
Otherwise.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Tanner's opinion, not mine or Tad's or Harry's.
But allegedly, he's also the one that wouldn't write me the prescription for my anxiety medicine. But I know plenty of people that did get prescriptions from him that totally didn't need them at all.
Mm.
And most of the drugs that I bought were on the street, most of them. Now, I kind of got creative.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, I'm very proud of you.
But one thing I will say is I never stole from anybody. I never fucked some old lady.
Wait, what?
I never did anything stupid.
Harry,
for
what does
drugs.
That mean?
You can ask Kyle.
He didn't sell his body.
Kyle will attest. I did not sell my body for drugs.
Kyle, is there a high demand for male prostitution in the elderly female community that I'm not aware of?
Oh, hell yeah. Trina. All that Viagra is going
to
go
somewhere. Oh, no, you'd have to ask Tanner.
Trina Harrington.
Tad, are you a secret male escort to the blue crown?
Oh, you know what?
If your pubes ain't blue, I ain't playing. Is that your motto?
Remember, what was her name? Anna Nicole Smith?
Yes.
Yeah,
You're the reverse.
Technical Western.
All right. Well, again, the phone lines are open at 317-795-0325. So if you want to weigh in on anything, it has to be germane to the topic. Don't call in about just random BS. But the phone lines are open. I am very proud of you, Tanner. I'm very proud of you for maintaining your sobriety. Absolutely. I know how incredibly difficult that is. And I'm proud of you for coming on and telling your story and hope that that helps somebody else. And Kyle,
I hope it does too.
Yeah.
And one thing.
Go ahead, give your final statement.
Final statement. You know, it halfway has to do with me. Like I said, I've done every drug, and I will say that if you have a kid and you're thinking about putting them on Adderall, please do not do that.
Why?
I've taken Adderall and I've taken methamphetamine. I was more twacked out on Adderall than I ever was on the meth.
Hmm.
When I did meth, I felt dirty, I felt disgusting, and I couldn't wait for it to wear off.
Hmm.
Adderall was euphoric. It was uplifting. It was a wonder drug, you know. Hmm. And it's the same thing. I mean, it feels almost identical.
Yeah.
And I know they say, well, some kids with ADD feel it this way. No, they get used to the feeling. It's like if I was to take 20 milligrams of caffeine a day, after 6 months, I probably wouldn't feel a difference taking the 20 milligrams of caffeine compared to none. And I don't think there's a huge difference between...
Right.
Adderall and methamphetamine. They when I took them, they acted the same. Only Adderall felt a little bit cleaner, per se, you know.
Kyle, any tips for people out there who may have a loved one who is going through what Tanner went through and they just don't know what to do?
You just gotta I don't want to say constantly, but you just gotta be there. You know, you can't, you know, shun them away just because you disagree with what they're doing. I mean, that's the time when you need to be there most, you know, when they're fucking up and they're doing the shit they ain't supposed to. Cause I feel like when that happens and people get like that and the people that they love and care for, or their family or whatever, they distance themselves from them. It sends them over, you know, and they just keep going.
Isolation is a very dangerous thing.
Isolation is a bad place to be, especially when you're addicted to drugs. You know, just be there for them, you know?
Yeah.
Positive reinforcement.
isolation, I think, is a huge problem across the board in a lot of the things that we're talking about. You look at what we've seen over the past few days. It's a very complex problem. I think all libertarians, you know, sort of hate these instances because it's kind of turned into just sort of a ghoulish dunking by the pro gun confiscation crowd. I had a discussion about guns with a family member on Friday, and they're like, it's not about gun confiscation. I'm like, every other major country has done that. That's what everybody, when you really sit down and get them honest, that's what they want. Like every, you know, and the reality is that in a country where there's three guns for every person, I think we own like 25% of the world's guns or something. I don't know.
I lost all mine in a boating accident.
Right. it's just turned into, like, I even saw one liberal friend today saying mental illness is the new thoughts and prayers. And I just think that is incredibly dangerous and horrible. Like,
I thought that was a joke. Is that serious?
No, he's dead serious. And you're taking a very complex sociological problem and you're trying to demagogue to win your side when in reality gun confiscation isn't going to work. It's never going to happen. And so there's just a lot of dangerous strains of thought around this stuff now. And I think we're all acting completely irresponsibly and grotesquely in a lot of ways. And I personally hate it. I hate these instances. And, you know, everybody, the old days of, you know, let's wait a couple days, let people grieve, let's get through this. Like, I mean, this one hit me hard. Like, I was doing a podcast with Alan Frank, Al Jackson, Frank Caliendo, Try to Be Serious. That's going to be on, that'll be released on Thursday. So the same day that this is out, where we talk about gun control. And then I did the following week, there'll be another episode. And, you know, we had a very thoughtful conversation about gun control with, you know, Al. Obviously doesn't agree with me, and I don't agree with Al, but we had a long, decent conversation about this. And I think that you can do that. But as I'm sitting there, I see the Dayton shooter had killed his sister. And, like, I just wanted to start crying. Like, and then the next day you read the story about the parents, the mother that shielded her two-month-old, and then the dad that jumped on top of the mother, and they both died. Like, it's incredibly upsetting, and it's an incredibly tragic story, and I just find all of it to be incredibly, I mean, there's just no other word than ghoulish. And I think a lot of people on the anti-gun side are really acting in a way that it's going to end up hurting their cause, because people who, I am not a gun owner. I've only fired a gun once with Jason Doolittle and Harry. I used to be for gun control. Like, a lot of people didn't know this, but when the Libertarian Party hired me in 2008, I was very much for gun control. I'm not, I'm not somebody who is like attending the NRA convention by any means. But
they're not pro gun enough,
right? Yeah, I'm not one of those guys. But like, you really turned me off when you start saying mental illness is the new thoughts and prayers, and you're going to just propagandize an important core piece of the solution,
right?
Because you want to just confiscate guns. Like, you're going, I just wrote, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And he's like, well, that's very thoughtful. I go, it's more thoughtful than anything you just wrote, because it's just that's a really fucked up place to take this. But let me give some details on exactly what happened. So this is the other thing. None of us are talking, like, both of these shootings, Tad, within the first 24 hours,
we had three. There's four, actually. Yeah. We had the garlic shooting, and then there was one in Oregon.
The garlic festival.
There was also... wasn't there one in Chicago, too, that was like, it was...
Well, Chicago had like 40... They had like 40 people shot.
But I think
like
there was one incident where it was like night. Several six people died in one shooting.
Yeah, it was.
That was like a drive-by. That's just
that's Chicago. A Wednesday for Chicago.
That's like callous to it, but that's just Chicago.
No, yeah. I mean, there was so much
over the weekend.
But yeah, and Al Jackson
over the past 2 weeks.
And Al Jackson made a great point. He goes, you know, when people say "but Chicago," it's sort of a dog whistle to say get your own community in order before you start criticizing ours. And that's not how I view it. I view it as, you know, A, why doesn't the media cover Chicago anymore? If you're going to propagandize, or essentially, or really, like, elevate these shootings, there's just no doubt that when you look at how the media covers this stuff, El Paso got the majority of the coverage because he fit within a certain narrative that politically was convenient. That went against Donald Trump. And even in the manifesto, it wasn't pro-Trump.
Yeah, I read the manifesto. I was like, what the hell? Like, what is it?
he's a Yang Gang. I mean, yeah, really, I mean, if you want to get down to it. And but they don't cover Chicago. And I can't help but think that that's because those are black people. And I think that
there's a lot of things
that holes in your story.
I think, yeah. And I think there's a lot of different reasons why. But it's also... I don't think that I don't know. I just think it's not
that people get outraged over the killing anymore. It's about who did it and what and who, politics they have.
It's how can I use the death of people for my own political? How can I project that to win political points? If you're doing that on any side, if you're trying to like right now score points for pro guns, like quit being a scumbag. Like I don't. I just look at all this stuff and I go, I understand the need to support our rights and to explain why our rights are important, but like don't look at this as some sort of like game. Like I just think it's Harry, you're trying to jump in. What are you saying?
Because it's not like the loss of life is tragic, whether it happened in Chicago, Baltimore, Indianapolis, Gary, and I just hate that they use the death tolls. They're like, look what happened. I'm like, well, that is a Saturday afternoon in Chicago. That is a long weekend here in Indianapolis. That is just 10 seconds of Baltimore, you know, or being in the wrong spot in Florida, you know, like stop giving these numbers out. These, you know, those numbers, will you really, if anyone really stop and look at the numbers, you know, they can look through all the propaganda BS.
Harry, do you think that there's any element of, do you think the fact that when mass shootings happen in the black community and they're not covered, but then when it happens in a white community, it gets a lot of press. Do you think that that is racially motivated? Like, is there an element of racism in that on the press's part?
I don't know if it's like, I don't want to attribute it to racism, but I will attribute it to just the simple fact that majority of these areas that I did cover or these towns are talking about are, you know, it doesn't fit their narrative of their like gun control of anyone's gun control confiscation method, and that their person is also mayor and their reps are also.
But ergo, yeah, those people's lives are worth less in the eyes of the media.
Yeah,
I mean that's how I look at it.
Yeah, because those lives aren't going to give clicks.
Yeah,
that too. Those aren't going to get clicks.
I'm wondering how many of them were on SSRIs or.
Mean the mass shooters?
Yeah, the mass shooters. How many of them were on SSRI medications or amphetamines? I would say over 50%. That's just a guess, but. And by the way, I love how I'm the only one with a mic switch here, except for Spangle.
Hey, there's one here, Harry. You can turn yours off kind of permanently. Harry, I had to take Harry's away because he would forget to turn his mic back on. So he wasn't responsible with
it. It's totally understandable.
All right, so let me give some details of the shooting. So we actually know kind of what's going on, what we're talking about. Again, if you want to jump in here, the phone number is 317-795-0325. You can call in and weigh in on the conversation. As of writing this, 22 people were killed and dozens more were injured on Saturday, August 3rd in a mass shooting at El Paso, Texas in a Walmart. Now, this is the seventh deadliest mass shooting in the United States. And El Paso Police Chief Greff Allen said the first 911 call came in at 10:39 a.m. local time and that emergency responders were on the scene 6 minutes later, 10:45 a.m. The shooting began in the parking lot outside the Walmart, according to an eyewitness who said she heard gunshots as she drove through the parking lot with her mother. The wounded in the mass shooting ranged from 2 years old to 82, according to authorities. The suspect is a 21-year-old male from Allen, Texas. We don't give their names. He was taken into custody without incident. Investigators believe that the suspect is the same person who allegedly posted a four-page
racist anti-immigrant document on the website 8chan before launching the attack. The document was reportedly posted online less than an hour before the attack. The document decried what the author believed was an ongoing invasion of Texas by Hispanic people and what the author foresaw as the impending destruction of America. It suggested that the planned attack would give immigrants an additional incentive to return to their countries of origin. Now, there is no other name for that besides terrorism. He was trying to inflict terror into a community of people so that they wouldn't take an action by using violence. There is absolutely no doubt that this person is a terrorist. I mean, does anybody want to disagree that this was a terrorist attack based on white supremacy? Okay. The author indicated he did not consider himself a white supremacist, though. The document lambasted, quote, race mixers and said the U.S. should be split into territories based on race. The document was critical of Republicans and also accused Democrats of using immigrants to engineer a nationwide political coup. The suspect wrote on LinkedIn in high school, I'm not really motivated to do anything more than what's necessary to get by. Working in general sucks, but I guess a career in software development suits me well. I spend 8 hours a day on the computer, so that counts towards technology experience, I guess. Two law enforcement officials told ABC News that the suspect told investigators that he wanted to shoot as many Mexicans as possible. The Walmart is located at Cielo Vista Mall, one of the city's most popular malls, particularly among Mexican tourists who cross the U.S. border to shop there before returning to Mexico. At least three Mexican nationals were killed in the attack, Mexican President Andres Manuel López Obrador said. He was forthcoming with information. He basically didn't hold anything back, El Paso Police Chief Greg Allen said during a Sunday news conference. Quote, you have to see it for yourself, he said at the crime scene. When I first got into this job, I never knew there was an odor to blood, but there is. And you firsthand see that. As far as my description of it, horrific would be undeserving as far as what the crime scene looks like. Officials say that an assault rifle similar to an AK-47 was secured at the scene. John Bash, the U.S. attorney for the Western District of Texas, said that the federal authorities are investigating the incident as an act of domestic terrorism and will consider federal hate crime charges and potentially seek the death penalty. Investigating the incident as an act of domestic terrorism means the suspect was intent on, quote, coercing and intimidating a civilian population. On Monday, law enforcement officials said that the suspect cased the Walmart going inside on Saturday without any weapons, apparently to size up the clientele inside the store, which is about 5 miles from the border. The suspect then exited the store and armed himself. He returned wearing protective earmuffs, safety glasses, and a rifle, according to video surveillance, you know, I can't say that word, of him inside the store. In response to the attack, Donald Trump said on Sunday, hate has no place in our country and we're going to take care of it. Trump later tweeted, we can, quote, we cannot let those killed in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio die in vain. Likewise, those so seriously wounded, we can never forget them and those many who came before them. Republicans and Democrats must come together and get strong background checks, perhaps marrying this legislation with desperately needed immigration reform. We must have something good, if not great, come out of these two tragic events. So, you know, All right, let's start with 8chan. Because I think there is, within this audience, there's probably a lot more people who are thinking. We talk a lot about free speech on this program. We talk a lot about the crackdown on a lot of this stuff. We talk a lot about the term white supremacist or racist being used as a pretext to demonetize people like Alex Jones and conspiracy theorists across the board and take them off. I have 8chan bookmarked. I have visited probably 5 times in my life. I don't make a habit of going to it. I know that it was started by a guy with disabilities who basically. Do you know the story?
They left. Hot Wheels left 4chan,
right?
Because it was they were cracking down too much on freedom of speech, and then he started 8chan and. I don't know. He ended up selling it to some other guy.
But what's wrong with free speech?
Well, there's nothing wrong with free speech.
I mean, if that dude, I don't care what he believed, but, you know, as fucked up as, or as screwed up as what happened, a lot of black people have the same views. Look at Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey thought that all black people should move back
but
to Africa.
Marcus Garvey didn't take an AK-47 and
absolutely
commit the seventh
worth. It's totally different story, but yeah. They had the same idea. Only one didn't shoot up a Walmart.
There's also Marcus Garvey was 100 years ago. Let's get back to what we're talking. I mean,
8chan has been also a target for the longest time. When those people did finally leave 4chan and also go to 8chan, it's, a lot of that exodus happened in around the couple of years was when the first great meme war started, which was the which was Gamergate. Yep.
Yeah, it was Gamergate.
But back to Gamergate. Shocking. We're back here again.
Yeah, Gamergate was a large fight in the gamer community about misogyny and women having a place in video games.
No. That was not what Gamergate. Gamergate was the original fake news fight.
Yeah,
this is why they were noticing fake news.
Gamers are the most opposed race.
Gamergate was about ethics in journalism.
Yep.
Because they were gamers were rising up against their journalism class, going for the medium that they enjoyed, and they watched that they were all working together and giving them fake news and giving them crappy games.
Basically, intersectional politics was creeping into.
It's kind of like Rotten Tomatoes
something. It wasn't
well,
even
they
that.
They were getting paid off to write good games. Reviews for bad games.
I'm trying to give a one sentence soundbite to the people who really don't care about Gamergate.
Well, Gamergate's important because it gave you Donald Trump.
It's the most oppressed race.
Yeah,
that's the.
To be perfectly honest, the meme warriors that fought in Gamergate, right? They came and fought for Donald Trump because they also saw the fake news go after him.
Yeah, I mean,
Harry, you called me fake news one time.
Fake news.
It's been
a couple years ago, but you called me fake news.
All right. So 8chan was 8chan basically the toxic elements of 4chan left started 8chan and because mods were cracking down on 4chan and
you want to consider
no,
it.
No.
No. They just split right, out of
describe 8chan to me, please.
8chan is just like 4chan. It's just people who
it's
just
a different website.
Board. Yeah, just a board. Just a board where people post stuff anonymously. That's it. That's it. Attaching morals to that? Nah, it's all on you, bro.
anyone can post on it. They really.
What does that mean,
but the
Harry?
Thing is, but the people who left like were fortunate because they were back in Gamergate. What you kept trying to get at that is that this discussion they were trying to find a place to discuss what was going on, and they needed to do it anonymously because everyone else would get destroyed.
Shut it down.
They were trying to do it in on 4chan. Well, they got blocked there, shut down, right, and they moved over to 8chan.
Yeah, Dennis makes a good. But didn't it start when a woman, an accusation that a woman was sleeping with a guy to get a good game review?
It wasn't just a guy; it was like five guys.
Okay,
was this you, Tad Western?
Yes,
Lisa, no. I'm calling you out.
What?
So, all right. So basically,
like the real start of Gamergate. Gamergate was a lot deeper than just one person. It was one person sleeping with five guys for a good game review. It was the ethics of it. The whole spiral of it couldn't have been with just one person. It was just the whole ethics of the whole situation.
Right. So they start 8chan as an anonymous place to kind of discuss a lot of this stuff, and it turns into a random board about a variety of subjects. And now, whenever a mass shooting happens, isn't 8chan sort of where all of the pictures spawn of here's like this one, the guy was wearing cargo pants when he walked in the Walmart. Here's the arrest shot, and he's not wearing cargo pants. That sort of stuff. That I mean, it isn't 8chan. I think it's fair to say that 8chan is where a lot of these guys who are on the fringes and. Like white supremacists, I mean, aren't they all having conversations on 4chan?
Well, they're all having conversations on Facebook.
They're on Twitter and everything else, too. I mean, right. It's not just one website.
I've never even heard of 8chan.
They use cars, too.
To be completely honest, I've never heard of
it. The idea that 8chan is somehow worse than what goes on Twitter or 4chan or any other website is, I mean, there's mods to 8chan. The post that was originally posted for this manifesto was a screenshot from what I saw. It was a PDF that somebody tried uploading to 8chan. And then all the comments on there were like, all right, FBI, and then a bunch of words I'm not going to use, but like, you're not going to do it, or this is bullshit. And it was taken down, I think, within 10 minutes of being posted.
Is it a bunch of, is it a bunch of guys who are just shit talking? And then,
yeah, it's
then 0.5%
yeah, it's
of
literally
them.
Anonymous. It's literally anonymous, whatever. Right. You'll have a post about, I don't know, whatever happens, whatever big happens, and not even just shootings or whatever, but mm-hmm. All right, say a space shuttle blows up. All right, there's going to be a thread on, all right, what's everybody know about what's going on with this? All news.
Right.
They'll get, I mean,
that would probably be hilarious.
Sort of like with 4chan when the Boston bombing happened. And
yeah,
all,
I mean, it's
4chan tried to track the guy down. They missed, like, they got
the
wrong guy.
In the Chan's own words,
himself.
It's, you know, weaponized autism, basically, yeah. is what it is.
It's like,
yeah.
If you want a more deep, full deep dive into 4chan and trolling culture, we did one with James Neese about 3-4 months ago. Oh, that's Christ. A great episode. Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, it's just random. It's anybody. It's anonymous. So there's correct. No, there's, it's pretty much the, you're going to get what people think. I mean, whether you want to call that racist or whether they're joking, you don't, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of racial terms.
One at a time. One at a time, Tanner.
But it's, I mean,
yeah, shut up, Tad.
Whether someone's actually a racist or not, I don't, who knows? I don't.
All right, go ahead.
You don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
It could be government agents.
Yeah, it's, yeah, yeah. Majority of the time, there's probably 30% government agents on it. Tad is not wrong.
Yeah, 8chan's been a honeypot for, well, all the chans are. I mean, anytime,
what does honeypot mean?
Basically, FBI agents, any type of agents.
Okay.
Where are they going?
Government, posting stuff online, replying to stuff, trying to get people in. Like it's honeypots.
Have you ever seen Trump's Facebook?
No.
You click on the comments and it's like, oh, thank you, President Trump. I love you so much. And thank you for all you do for our country.
Right.
With like 8 hearts. You know, that's a fucking bot. Well,
nah, I think that's Deborah at church. that is the boomer that I saw wearing the Trump hat.
It's
the
like,
fair today.
Surely not. Like, surely not that many people. But you're right. I mean, I was playing poker last night. We were playing for no money, but I was playing poker last night and this guy was like, you know what? I'm proud of Trump and he's doing a great job. And I'm like, man, that is the same dude that I see commenting
yeah.
on that.
No,
post,
they exist. Yeah.
Saying I'm proud of you for the first time. I'm happy to be.
No,
American.
I think so. The guys that I know that go on 8chan or 4chan, specifically 8chan. Tad, they're the guys that we were hanging out with a lot in 2016, 2015. They were the guys who were like, ah, I think free speech is important, so if I want to make this anti-Semitic joke, it's just because I'm joking. And then by 2017, it's like, oh, you're in a white nationalist group, okay, because you're not kidding anymore. It seems like a lot of those. It seems like a lot of those guys, where they just start just kidding, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, why do you actually hate Jews?
Yeah, and you're also talking. Oh, that's really loud. Yeah. And you're also talking about only one small part of the website, the political okay. side. There's multiple boards on.
So it's
I mean,
not,
you could talk about television. There's all kinds of shit.
I read on CNN that it's just the den of.
It is. CNN. It's exactly what CNN.
But
is.
It's just yeah.
If you don't understand the culture or what it is, I mean.
So is it fair to say that a lot of the journalists who are covering 8chan and kind of like you listen to these New York Times podcasts?
They have no idea what they're talking about. I think right. I sent I sent an article from somewhere that it may have been ABC News or somebody did they were going through the,
oh yes, they're
going through the,
find that.
Oh, what the abbreviations of
yes.
certain things and what they thought they meant.
It's absolutely hilarious.
It was hilarious. And those weren't even like, those were like normal. Abbreviate like if I showed you an F, those abbreviations, you'd know what they're. Those are just like shortening
SJW.
Yeah,
SJW. Was like socialist Jews are running the world.
Yeah,
so I don't know how they.
I can't remember what it was.
The internet slugs.
Spotted Jew.
Did they publish it?
No, oh, yeah. It was a legit news.
It was a big thing.
And, all right. Here we go. Everybody be quiet.
No, it wasn't for me. I just saw it online.
No. Here, I'll play it. Everyone quiet. Yeah, I posted it.
Was it ABC? Who was it?
So they literally cannot
MSNBC.
It's MSNBC. Yeah, you'll have to let me turn this up.
Okay, code word. So they literally cannot be more. Oh, that's the guy talking. I was about to yell at Harry.
I thought it was Harry.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, is that Harry?
So they have on the screen milk and bacon and okay signs in graphics. And it says, right, frog cult uses secret code of racist and homophobic words.
Code words.
So they literally cannot be more wrong
instance,
about all of this.
Snowflake is code for black person.
Oh.
SJW is code for stingy Jew.
Use
the term cuck, a derogatory for men who love obese women, and trap, which means hot girl, I want to rape the black person.
Had you not heard that, Harry?
No, I did not hear that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, that was MSNBC.
All right, let me play that one more time because it's so funny.
That trap one got me.
Quiet. This literally cannot be more wrong
instance,
about all of this.
Snowflake is code for black person.
Oh.
SJW is code for stingy Jew.
Use
the term cuck, a derogatory for men who love obese women, and trap, which means hot girl, I want to rape.
Like, yeah.
Where did they come up
with dude, they did not get one of those right.
That's almost like someone on 4chan was trolling them, like when they... like gave him those definitions.
That's sort of what the 4chan 8chan thing is, like milk. Like milk is a symbol for white supremacy. The okay sign is
the whole okay thing came out of let's try and get people to take something that was a normal, just something normal and turn it into race. See, because it was literally remember the clown world thing that came out, how Twitter started banning all the clown memes.
Explain that.
Because they basically somebody on 4chan was like, this is literally a clown world we're living in with the normies. The news media will pick up this stuff and they'll run with it. They think that an okay symbol is actually white power.
Right. You're
trolling them. Really.
And they're literally just trolling. Yeah. They're like, well, let's see what the craziest shit that we can do to get these people and pick them up. And they literally started banning clown memes because honk honk
was white supremacy.
Yeah, that's.
Okay, but how many people are using the okay symbol because they're trolling, and how many people are like, this is the hot new racist thing that I can do?
I don't know. I don't know, because everything's racist now.
It was memed a lot. Like, you see the clowns.
Well, they would take old pictures of, like, people from the 90s, doing okay symbol. Yeah. One of them was Joe Rogan. They took Joe Rogan, and he, like, retweeted because he had a headshot where he was giving an okay symbol back when he had hair. And he was like, oh, shit, I hope the internet don't find this. They're going to think I'm a racist now. And it's just like, what? Like, it's just everything's gone nuts, and it's outrage culture, basically.
If you want to find that video of the MSNBC piece, check it out in the videos tab on We Are Libertarians Facebook page. Harry, do you got anything you want to jump in here with?
That's the other thing with it. Like, it's that whole, they're blaming 8chan for all this different stuff when people do it on every other site, Discord, Facebook. This is just how the internet is. Like, this is just a collection of just chat rooms, which is easy to be found. You know, eventually sites like this were all, tons of sites like this exist that you can only access using Tor. So it's like, but this is one they can find. And this is one that someone posted something to that we can try to attribute to this person. But,
the latest man, they were trying to take down 8chan back when the New Zealand thing happened.
Correct.
Because he live streamed to Facebook, that's where the original video was.
I mean, it was the Facebook. Yeah.
I don't understand why people wouldn't at least,
but they want to go after the platform because they don't understand it, I guess. I don't.
Yeah.
It's all, I think more it had to do with them, what's it called? The Q conspiracy is also on 8chan.
Yeah. Right.
So, my favorite's the Navy SEAL.
And there had been a lot in the past month or two, there's been a lot of news about like 8chan and all these, a lot of exposés, I guess.
Well,
they're the boogeyman.
But here's the thing. There's a lot of red meat there. that's the problem.
Especially if you don't understand it. Like, right. I mean.
So that's the place that... a guy who will go and kill all these people because they're of what he considers a lesser race, he feels comfortable posting that manifesto there.
Well, but
he's showing off for his boys.
But there's shit posted there all the time and it all gets taken down. There's actual mods. It gets taken down.
When you guys were in school, was there a Todd Army? Oh my God. I'm not joking, dude.
I don't even know if I should ask for more information, but I'm going to. Go ahead, Tana.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Hold on, Harry.
We're off the rail.
Harry, should I ask for more information?
No.
All right, we're going to move on.
Harry, shut up. You know what exactly? They wear camouflage, and you know they're the exact type that you would suspect.
You mean the guy, the school shooter type?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they wear camouflage, and in the winter they wear winter camouflage. Well, when I was in school, I started wearing the ATA patch, the Anti-Tard Army Alliance patch.
But so you were like the Antifa of your school.
Except we had the NPA and the ATA, the Normal People's Alliance. And the Anti-Tard Army.
All right, shut up.
I'm just being honest. That's the real story.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
He's lying.
Are you lying because you don't want to be associated? No, am I being bamboozled here?
See, we didn't go to school together.
Okay. You
know? He's lying. Look at him.
Did you ever have the Tard Army at your school?
Did you ever have, like, the Tard Army?
Don't slow it down more, Tanner.
Every school's got that group of people that wears camouflage.
Oh, yeah.
And for us, it was
black. They wore black eyeliner. They loved Dylan Klebold. That's an emo phase. Like, that's what it was in my school. I think he's talking more.
No, this motherfucker got caught with an RPG.
He's talking about the guy. He's literally talking about the group of people that live out in the woods, and then the FBI infiltrates them.
He's talking about militia type people. I'm talking about somebody that got busted with a grenade at school. His name was Derek Cook. He got stung on the dick by a bee. Here's his profile.
Well, now that's why he's turned to terrorism.
There's his profile picture of him holding an RPG.
Oh, yeah.
That's real.
Caution, angry gamer.
Angry gamer.
I think...
Anytime someone holds an RPG, you look for that yellow, look for that yellow stripe. See that yellow stripe on it?
Yeah.
Yep, that means it's a training.
There is no yellow stripe on it. It's just a caution, angry gamer. He's a fucking weirdo, is what he is.
All right,
subscribe to PewDiePie.
So let me transition into the Dayton shooting. So the Dayton shooting kind of ties into exactly what Tanner's talking about in a weird way. I don't know how. So just after 1 a.m. on Sunday, August 4th, a gunman opened fire in a popular part of Dayton, Ohio, killing 9 people and injuring 14. The suspect, a 24-year-old Ohio man, traveled to the Oregon district of Dayton with his sister and another companion, eventually parting ways. At 1:05 a.m., the suspect, wearing body armor and ear protection and carrying a .223 caliber rifle with a 100-round magazine, moved through an alley and began firing shots. The weapon was purchased legally online from Texas and shipped to a gun store in the Dayton area. Authorities added that the gun was modified with a pistol brace. Harry, what does that mean?
Is it a pistol brace?
He had a pistol grip on it.
No. Instead of having a stock, he had the arm support. Okay. It's completely legal to my knowledge. It depends. Well, the ATF, I don't know if they're listening. I'll probably fuck this up. But
just
I believe if the... there's a hole. I don't know. You have to... It depends on what length the barrel is, I believe.
Mm.
Good answer, Tad Lester.
And... if it's a certain length, however you buy it, it has to be bought. It can be classified as a pistol or an assault rifle, depending on what stock is on it and the length of the barrel. So this could have been a short barrel rifle, if I'm not mistaken.
Pistol brace is the brace.
Yeah, it was the brace on the back. Yeah, like
to kind of keep it steady because it's
the arm brace, like they sell on like a SIG, I guess MPX or whatever.
So the suspect shot and killed one person in the alley before moving out to the street where he shot and killed 8 more, including his sister. Dayton Police Chief Richard Beal said officers were already in the area and responded immediately. Within about 30 seconds from the start of the shooting, police had located and killed the suspect outside a local sports bar about 100 feet where the shooting began.
Did you watch the security cam footage?
I didn't, but I guess he, like, 6 cops moved in right away.
There was probably 6 on the camera, but it would be like downtown on,
this is like a bar district.
There's cops everywhere in this. I was like, is this shooting already happened or what? And you see the guy, you don't see him shooting anybody, but you see him approach the,
he didn't even get into the bar.
Had he gone into the bar, it would have been really bad, yeah.
Yeah, and he approaches the bar, and he just gets blasted with a shotgun from... And there's... Damn. You see all these cops from the security camera. There had to be six, at least, all guns drawn, rushing in. Like, they went right to it. They stopped it.
So I asked my friend Alina, who's been on the program, and she said that's where she goes to party downtown. Like, that's where they... She's like, I wasn't there that night. The comedy club that I, you know, have a lot of friends that work at is right... Like, he was in there right next
that's
to
that's what it looked like. I mean, it literally looked like it was the bar district downtown Indy.
But
just with all the cops
exactly.
And
so there were a lot of people... There were a lot of cops, and I guess they came in and just unloaded. But had he gone in that bar, it would have been really bad. So authorities are unsure if the victim meant to kill his sister, 22-year-old student at Wright State University. The murder of a sister is called a sororicide, and it isn't a well-studied phenomenon in the United States. A 2013 FBI study of 160 mass shootings between 2000 and 2013 found that in 9 cases, shooters killed relatives before going into a public place to continue firing. A 1981 study of honor killings in the Middle East concluded that in about one-third of instances, brothers killed sisters. Now, 4 classmates say the suspect had a kill list and a rape list. The Associated Press...
Well, if you're going to have one, you might as well have the other, right?
Did I tell you about the time I was number one on somebody's kill list in high school?
Hold that thought.
Was it the Tart Alliance?
Dude, it was the Tart Army? He was a captain in the Tart Army.
All right. Well, hold on to that thought, please. The Associated Press reported that classmate said he was suspended in high school for compiling a hit list. Nobody disbelieves you. It's just not the appropriate place for you to insert that particular story.
Well, I'm sorry.
We're in the middle of serious.
Right. We're in a war, man.
I've got
PTSD from it.
The Associated Press reported that classmates said he was suspended in high... I'm trying to get through this, and Kyle just can't stop laughing. He's just rolling his eyes, shaking his head. So he was suspended in high school for the hit list of those he wanted to kill and a rape list of girls he wanted to sexually assault. The discovery of the hit list... Are you okay over there? All right, just keep your mic off.
What?
The discovery of the hit list... Beavis over here. I can't get through... the discovery of the hit list in early 2012 sparked a police investigation. A roughly one-third of school students skipped out of school out of fear, according to an article. So basically his high school, there was a third after it kind of became known in 2012. They just didn't go to school because of this kid. Suspect appeared to tweet extreme left views and abiding interest in violence. A Twitter account that appears to belong to the suspect retweeted extreme left-wing and anti-police posts, as well as tweets supporting Antifa. The Twitter account liked several tweets about the shooting in El Paso and retweeted messages supporting Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. There were also several posts condemning police and supporting Antifa protesters. So, you know, let me see if I can find real quick this article, because it kind of really gives you an insight into the brain of this particular person. Who seemed just incredibly disturbed. This is from Vice.
Oh, God.
I know. Exclusive. Dayton Shooter was in a, quote, porno grind band that released songs about raping and killing women.
Oh, I shared that with you, didn't I?
Not this article, but this is a pretty good article. So over the... So...
The name of his band cracked me up.
He was deeply involved in the misogynistic male-dominated gore grind or porno grind extreme metal music scene, and it has regional following in the Midwest and is known for sexually violent, death-obsessed lyrics and dehumanizing imagery depicting women. Now,
in other news, James Neese just sold his drum set.
He's looking for a lead singer.
That was a solid joke.
That was pretty good.
I'm just going to need you to mute your mic, Tanner. Just keep it off. Don't talk through.
He'll be giggling through
Let
these.
Let me just get through this because I'm trying to be serious. This is a serious subject and you can't handle this. So, here's the thing. Like, sometimes I feel like we're in a Monty Python sketch, Tad, and the foot is about to just... I'm waiting for the foot to come squash me because this is one of those times where I'm going, this is serious news.
Oh, this is real life. I mean,
this is real life.
This is... Real life is stranger than fiction.
So over the past year, the 24-year-old shooter occasionally performed live vocals in the band Menstrual Munchies, which released albums titled 6 Ways of Female Butchery and Preteen Daughter Pussy Slaughter. With cover art showing rape and massacre of female bodies, he also performed with a group called Putrid Liquid. One of his bandmates is taking the recordings down. He's removing them out of fear that the vulgar music he produced will make a cult hero out of the murderer, who was killed by police at the scene. He's also received death threats online because of his association with the killer. Now, this guy's been writing music and recording it under the name Menstrual Munchies for more than 5 years, and says he did it mostly as a joke and is now sickened by that Betts apparently took it all seriously. I feel shitty having let him in the band doing those lyrics, he said, because I know, like, whereas I saw it as a joke, he, like, let's play this and we'll shock some people, then the people will know that we were laughing about it. He didn't see it as a joke. He was like, fuck yeah, we're going to do this. It's like, Jesus Christ, how much of this was real life for him? In addition to scrubbing the internet of the band's recordings, he is reaching out to anyone who hosted his songs or videos to ask them to remove those too. I took it all down. I'm trying to get everyone to take all of it down. I don't want to be associated with it. I don't want it blowing up. I don't want him romanticized. I don't want any of this romanticized. I want people to erase him from history. Now, the porno grind scene is it exists in obscure pockets of the larger... Just stay over there, Tanner. Do not walk into frame on the camera. I know, but still. I'm going to say cock, and you're going to laugh, and that's how it is. So grindcore it consists of a handful of bands who often play shows to each other or small audiences. Even better known bands in the genre writ large, such as the Germany-based Cock and Ball Torture, have just 10,000 thousands of fans. You guys are so immature. Menstrual Munchies often performed with other regional acts like Necro Cannibal Ass Grinder. Could you guys please be serious?
That was my Xbox Live name for a while.
Stop. This is serious. Bill Nye, the Nazi Spy, and Cunt Torch. Cunt Torch. Playing festivals like...
That's an all-ginger band.
playing festivals like the Porn Fields of Illinois' Grindfest.
Porn Fields.
Or a former venue in Columbia, Missouri called UPS Under the Porn Shop, named for its location beneath a megastore porn shop. Owned by the mother fellow scenester Zach Walton of the band Groin Mallet. In a phone interview, Walton, who has booked the Menstrual Munchies at the venue, said the porno grind scene is tight-knit and that he and his friends have been devastated to learn what the kid did, but he doesn't believe the content of the music contributed in any way to any of his actions. It's just the music we love, you know, like, it's fun to play, it's energetic, and there's nothing else like it, so we play it, Walton, 29, said. And then we get people like this who, you know, are fucking sick in the head, who get into our scene and ended up killing 9 people and almost, you know, putting a bad name on our scene.
Cunt Waffle 48.
Right. And shut up. And that's not fair for the rest of us.
We're just out here trying to sell records, bro.
The shooter was not involved in any of the writing or recording, but only performed as a live vocalist for Menstrual Munchies. Nevertheless, he said he removed the band's Facebook, Bandcamp, YouTube pages from the web, but several saved versions can be found of the sexually violent and demeaning album titles and artwork. Many of the band's songs are still active on other websites. The members of Putrid Liquid did not respond to a request for the comment through their Bandcamp.
Their manager didn't reach out?
Yeah.
That's not right. You're going to tell me shut the fuck up, but... If you remember G.G. Allin and the Murder Junkies back in the 90s, mm-hmm. Nobody gave a fuck back then. So why are they throwing a fit now?
Tipper Gore did.
Well, Tipper Gore was bitching about fucking
video games.
Twisted Sister.
Yeah.
We're not going to take it. G.G. Allin was throwing shit at people.
So we'll talk.
There's a big difference about that.
What are you eating? All right.
One of your Milky Ways.
Kyle, he's begged me for months for a shot. He said, give me a shot. I want to come back. Tanner on wall, #. And he has done nothing but misbehave all night long. The first half was great. You were great in the first half. It was riveting.
It's the sugar, man.
You're falling apart, son.
G.G. Allin and the Murder Junkies are coming to Chicago.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are, dude.
I don't think G.G. Allin is.
He's dead.
I know.
But seriously, the Murder Junkies are coming to Chicago.
Case in point, if you can go see G.G. Allin when you go to Porkfest.
All right, so back to the story.
Anyway.
The guy says he feels conflicted. On the one hand, he believes music and art do not cause people to commit murder, but on the other hand, he feels guilty for having associated with someone who carried out violence similar to the kind he portrays in his songs. He said he contacted the Dayton police immediately after hearing the news, but they hadn't replied to him, although he said the FBI visited his home on Monday to interview him. Looking back, there were some clues that things weren't right with the shooter. He was a loner, emotionally withdrawn, and with both his bandmates and others in the scene. Now, the shooter once brought a handgun on a tour to Iowa and suggested to others they rob some gas stations, something the band guy said he chewed the shooter out for but didn't take seriously. Trying to edit out all the names. He said he and others had recently distanced themselves from the shooter over his bizarre behavior, including talking in realistic terms about the violence depicted in the music, telling stories and about his past methamphetamine use. Uh-oh, Kyle.
Shocker.
And lying about his criminal record. He said the shooter also told them about a previously reported incident in which he was suspended from his high school for keeping a hit list and rape list of classmates. He wanted to commit violence against them. And the shooter had mentioned to the bandmate that he was depressed.
Sounds like Levi Prince.
Still, he didn't think that he was capable of this kind of slaughter. The bandmate didn't think he was. I think he decided that he was going to kill himself and was like, I don't have the balls to do it, so he drew a gun. The man speculated. The band hadn't been active since the founder found out in July that the shooter had contacted showgoers online after a recent gig and asked them to send him money on PayPal, something the band guy found obnoxious. Now, the music was created to be controversial. It was inspired by the world of shock rock acts like Mentors and G.G. Allin.
Oh.
He often played fully naked wearing an executioner's hood. In a video, they can be seen performing in nothing but Santa Claus beards and hats. If the goal was attracting controversy, they succeeded. The band guy said even some of his close friends found the misogynistic imagery to be too much. Now, the scene is sure to be examined in a national conversation as social critics point to toxic masculinity as a root of gun violence. The shooter's apparent political beliefs were also drawing scrutiny. He identified anti-fascists and slaughtered Nazis and gun violence in social media posts that have since been removed by Twitter and Facebook. Some of the political right have seized on that to infer his ideology was part of his motive. That's the first time we get to his political motive. If you look at the last article about mass shootings on Vice's website, it's far-right shooters are, so predictable. So one of the anti-fascist, one of the bands, extreme metal band Neckbeard Death Camp, distanced themselves in a tweet from their scene. Oh, turns out the Dayton shooter was literally effing F. Neckbeard Death Camp wrote in a since-deleted tweet, I don't know if I would use the term leftist to designate one of the dudes in the Menstrual Munchies. Anti-fascist, sure, but not great with women. Just another dime a dozen Ohio grind dude who caped progressive politics while treating women like shit. The band continued in another tweet. They followed up saying they didn't know the shooter. Ryan Ward of the Ohio-based Cunt Torch, a band that regularly played with the Menstrual Munchies, likened the coming backlash to how Marilyn Manson and South Park were blamed for the Columbine shootings, although he acknowledged that it is somewhat different because a member of a band committed the heinous act, just not a fan. Still, he finds it hard to believe that the dehumanization portrayed in the music contributed to an environment in which the shooter felt desensitized enough to commit actual violence himself, including shooting to death his own sister and her boyfriend, two of the victims of this rampage. Part of the music is you want to figure out, he says, ways to portray people as being dehumanized as much as possible or, degraded. A sexual dehumanization objectification is a big way of doing that, Ward said. If for some reason the music he made or whatever somehow did do that for him, I feel that it is an exception, not the rule, when it comes to people making this music. I feel it's our responsibility to make it a point to let people know that, no, this is not what we actually stand for. Our songs aren't prophecies. They're like not fucking ominous fucking messages that are supposed to come true. They're just songs. So that leads into
he probably didn't write the lyrics.
No, he didn't. It said he didn't. But this leads into a broader discussion that's kind of going on. What motivates these guys to become mass shooters. We're going to do that show for you on Saturday. I will be here doing that. But it's, you know, the president blamed video games. The Democrats blamed Trump's rhetoric. The you could make the case that the Dayton shooter was a copycat of the El Paso shooter. Was kind of activated by that.
He feels more to me. I don't. This is my opinion. I think he was more trying to go out like suicide by cop or something.
Right.
To
be honest with you. That's what I think it sounds like.
But I don't know.
To be honest, if the Minstrel Monkeys were playing at the town tavern, I'd probably go see him. That sounds hilarious.
But I had a long discussion.
Fucking insane.
Yeah, I had a long discussion with Reinhold in the group about this. I was like, okay. So 8chan and the white supremacist groups, or ISIS, and you know, the Muslim cleric, or the Christopher Cantwells of the white supremacist world, who like groom these guys, who find these disaffected lost guys, or video games and the repetitive dehumanization that you see if you're constantly playing shooter games and have no friends, I guess, or music like this that is inherently dehumanizing. I don't know what if there is a debate, because it's probably a gray, not black or white. Some of this stuff, this kid was attracted to this music because it's who he was. There's a theory that the reason that crime has greatly dropped and that rape has dropped specifically in the world is that access to porn has increased. And so people...
they don't have any time to go out raping with all the porn to be watched.
They're not.
I mean, really, there's rape porn for them to watch.
Tanner, please mute your mic.
For
Stop.
Them to make.
Quiet. So there's the reality is that people are seeing their proclivities in private, and they're not going out and acting them out. Like, that's, you know, for these guys, it's a joke. For this guy, it's what he's into. And that's sort of the problem with the white supremacist stuff and the jokes on 8chan and what's going on with like this particular music. Like 1%, 10%, we don't know. They're not joking. So 90%.
You're looking at percentage points of a point.
Yeah, probably.
They're going to act on
I mean,
it.
Hell, right. Even if it was 2%, me and Tad, that means 98 others are.
So I guess we'll start to wrap up because we're way over time, but what is, well, kind of the final question that I want to ask you guys, and maybe I'll ask Carrie to weigh in first. How do you balance a society? How do you protect people's rights, the right to free speech, particularly in this instance? How do you protect the ability for people to speak freely in a society while protecting us from the 1% that engage in that rhetoric or engage in those things? I mean, I think that's the question. That's one of the big questions we ought to be having. Like, gun confiscation is just a conspiracy theory at this point. It's not going to happen. But I think that the idea that there are a lot of guys being groomed by these violent, dangerous ideologies in whether it's Syria or El Paso or Chicago, even like young men are attracted to violence because of certain maybe biological issues or sociological issues. It's a very complex problem, and it doesn't have a very easy solution. And so as we continue to have this conversation, as we will, how do we do that? How do we protect ourselves while balancing rights, specifically free speech on the internet, Harry?
All right. The thing is, when you're going after percentage points, if this thing, let's say this thing did cause this radicalization of these jokes, these memes did cause anything, right? Then we would probably have people doing this in droves. It's just the same way we lost all the people who used to scream YOLO. You don't hear it anymore because we lost all those people, you know? It's
meaning they died.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. You only live once. You're out.
That's a lot of them.
Solid joke, Harry.
The thing that I wanted to get with is so many people make these jokes, and they just go about their day. They will make some awful joke that's off color. I don't know why they make them. I don't make them myself, but people make them, and they keep moving around their day. You know, so many people who have mental illnesses they go about their day. You know, it's just too small percentage point until they've got these hypotheses on why people do these type of things. I think there's probably more into suicide by cop than anything, or just people just not feeling attached to society for some reason. There's other issues there, but I always feel the easy blame is let's blame the memes, let's blame the gun, and let's blame other things that are easy. They're right in front of us. This way, and the one thing people like doing, and they were like pushing these red flag logs, which are freaking scary as all heck. But, you know, it's people want to be looking like they're doing something right now. So it's easy to protect free speech on the internet. Just let them, you know, back off. Let site mods do what they do. If people want to mod it, take it down and allow people to speak. The best way to take down any idea, we've said it before, is just let them speak. Let them talk about it. Let them bring their bad ideas out, get it up, and we will shout them. We will shout their bad ideas down. Absolutely. Not because we're silencing, just because their ideas are just bad. You know, and I'd rather them speak about it than sit there and in their little, hate dens, and they sit there in the hate den and they decide, oh, I'm going to go do this. You know, I'm hoping they find now they've caught a lot of these mass shooter types alive, that they can figure out what made them tick, what actually made them go after it. And you can't say it was memes, because we've had them for a while, because you can't blame memes. You can't blame the jokes. Yeah.
But is there an argument to be made that because there is an element of finding, for me, I think a lot of this is, for whatever reason, a lot of these guys don't think about how, especially if you're over 35, 40, you had a lot more uncles around, you had a lot of family around, you had more community organizations, community institutions. You had more people kind of nudging you and going, no, that's not how we act. That's not what we do. That's not how we, and it's so easy for young men today to kind of slip into isolation. The only time that they actually get any kind of contact with other people is this Dayton shooter seems to me like the kind of guy who, even if he had tried to go out and find community, was so bizarre that he wouldn't be accepted by it. And so he just stays isolated. And the only place that he can really find any connection with people is online, in some of these darker places of the internet. And so he wants to show off for those people. He wants the social proof that comes with being one of their heroes, because he looks at the Christchurch shooter or the El Paso shooter and says, I want to be like Dylan Klebold, the Columbine shooter. I want to be like, the Jonesboro shooter.
I think tribalism has a lot to do with it.
I think so. I think there is. So should, if 8chan is a place where these guys feel that they can show off and be a big hero in their community, should those places exist? It's not a matter of should the government shut it down. That's an absolute no. Absolutely. But should the free market take care of places? The free market took care of 8chan. It's down. They lost their domain. People can voluntarily disassociate themselves with a place like an 8chan, but should these places exist? I know probably what you guys are going to say is they'll just move to some other place, which is really the truth.
There will be another place. And
yeah, and they've got their tour address still. Their tour still up. So,
well, there's more than tour.
Yeah, these guys. Well, and that's part of the problem is why you don't see as much of it in the
problem isn't the posting. It's the actual going out and doing the.
It's the action.
The thing is, all right, so then you're going to an idea of men's issues. That's when people will now want to know, what's going about this? But because men have been committing suicide in droves of the last decade.
Which is really, exactly. Veterans, if you want to talk about
the... no one wants to point and talk about it. All they want to do is look at white men or men in general and just kind of demonize them. It's you're bad. You're the bad. You made everything bad. You're worse than the baddest thing that we can think of. Okay. Yeah. And if you want to see how bad it's going to get, the International Conference of Men Issues is coming up. It actually going to talk about a lot of the things you're talking about, but no press is on about it. The only press you're going to hear about it is people protesting the event and trying to get it shut down.
Absolutely.
And if you're a depressed, suicidal male, you're like, at what point do I just go out and take some other people out with me? I mean, why not?
You know, I'm 22. I was, I was 20 years old, and I had two friends commit suicide.
Hmm.
And they both happened within 2 years, both males.
Yeah.
And that I can remember, neither of them were on prescription medication. Neither of them took prescription drugs or street drugs. One of them was an alcoholic, and the other one, I was there, and he took too much.
Well, deaths of despair, overdoses, suicides have astronomically risen in the last decade or two, to the point that now the average age for an American has decreased. Yep. Our life expectancy in America has decreased 3 of the last 4 years.
He was 22, I believe.
Two of the last 3, I think, actually, to be fair. Like the real skirt, like not diminishing or minimizing these mass shootings, because it's certainly an issue that society needs to deal with. Suicides make up a significantly larger portion of gun deaths.
Oh,
it's the largest portion. The second is gang-related, which drug war-related, basically. And then issues of domestic violence, where I think that's around 1,900 a year, where, you know, men and women are killed in domestic violence incidents.
The numbers, I believe it's under 300 for a technical mass shooting where, like, right. 6 people are wounded.
Right.
I know somebody that went to prison.
That's the calculation of what you actually define what a mass shooting is.
Yeah, everybody's got a different – depending on your agenda, I think, there's a different
Well, and if you look at the
definition,
list of mass shootings every single day this year, but then you look at the actual like underlying data of why that happened, it is drug war related. It's not these one offs like El Paso that happen several times a year. Like I think a lot of the media is trying to I don't know. Do you guys? Right. Let me ask it this way. If, like in Chicago, there's a drive-by and it's gang-related, it's retaliatory, and 7 people die, is that a mass shooting in the same way that the Dayton shooter is?
I think
a mass
people
shooting?
Can grasp the understanding behind they chalk that up to, you know, violent or not violent, but obviously violence, but you know, a crime, drugs, whatever. Right. There's a reason that someone got shot.
Yeah, I mean,
what scares the shit out of
somebody.
People is when you're
hold on, Tanner.
What scares the shit out of people is you're literally dealing with a small percentage of the population is crazy to begin with. There's a super small percentage is going to act on that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that go out and do these shootings. You know, I mean,
right.
there's literally nothing you can do about it. That's why it's so scary.
I agree. I think the reason that we don't get wigged out by
a
drug war shooting, basically.
There's
is
some
that,
type of that registers.
Right. There's makes a framework sense. In our mind for that.
Yeah, but someone walking into a Walmart and shooting people, shooting a 2-year-old, that right. I mean, how does there's can't no sane person like that can even wrap their mind
right.
And you'll never know. You'll never know what was going through that guy's head, even though they caught him alive. You know, the Ohio one's kind of crazy. It's like what is the purpose? You shoot your sister, her boyfriend, and like what
right.
you know, it doesn't register, which it never will because
no. We
these
still,
people are crazy.
I think that's another thing is that and that's why I want to do the show this weekend about this. I don't really think I've never heard a good explanation. We just jump right to guns, but we never actually have the conversation about like why did the Charleston or the Texas or the Columbine? Like we see these manifestos, but like has there ever been
is
research?
That, have you ever read a manifesto and said you know what that. That's sensible.
There's never been
no. There's no. It's no. fucking.
There's
crazy.
Never been a good story. But one of my friends died in a shooting, and he. I wouldn't say he was a drug addict. He wasn't one of the two that I mentioned earlier. This is a third guy. His name was Chance Smith. He was at his friend's house, who happened to deal in meth, and apparently that friend had made a threat to another guy. And that guy acted on the threat with two other friends of his. And they showed up at the guy's house, pulled out a gun, and exchanged gunfire. Well, my buddy jumped in between the gunfire and got caught in the collarbone, and it ended up hitting his heart, and he died. So he's a victim of the drug war. Yeah, he dabbled in drugs. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he was a saint. But, you know, he didn't deserve to die. It was not a death sentence. And another one, you know, I mean, it just happens all the time, and people don't realize exactly what's going on. Because if there was decriminalization of all drugs tomorrow, that shooting would have never happened, I don't believe.
Right.
If Arvin Vora was president, I don't believe that would happen.
That alone would take care of so much violence and immigration issues across all of this hemisphere. I mean, it really would. You know, I don't know. I just look at this and I go, this is a large, complex problem.
The gun debate thing, I don't think they want to have a conversation. It's always just take the guns. That's the first thing. And like you'll hear, like the Democratic debate, it's like,
Which is foolish to stop
keep
you because
hitting the same nail.
So what are you going to do? You're going to take.
Well, so what they want? Well,
they're going to go door to door, is what Kamala Harris said.
Yeah. Okay. So to save hundreds of lives a year, we're going to expend thousands of lives a year from both police officers and gun owners who are not giving up their guns. I mean, to Kamala Harris saying that she's going to just she's just going to take executive action, subvert the Constitution. That's the dictator. That she's the reason why the Second Amendment exists.
More like dictation.
They're pushing her really hard, too. They're pushing her hard.
Like, yeah.
Well, Tulsi bagged her and threw in the fire, so. Dictator and a dictator.
Harry, you wanted to jump in here.
Well, I was just going to say, like, and that just shows you, like, the dictatorial control of them and why the Second Amendment is so important, because they're so thirsty after the Second that, you know, that one should be one of the hardest to go after. And once they do it, you know, what's the first, third, the rest of them, they'll just go after it. And they have systematically, the state has just been encroached on all of those. The one last thought I did while I was trying to wrap up is the suicide thing with, when it comes to gun deaths, is that just because people like to say, like, well, it's easy access to a gun. Well, people in Japan don't have easy access to the gun, and that's why they have a suicide forest.
A suicide forest.
Oh yeah.
And they made a movie about it, The Forest.
Was that the Jake Paul?
What is
Paul
the suicide?
Was that the Jake and Logan Paul video?
Yes.
And they just go out there and they kill themselves.
Yeah, they go there.
Young men just go up, hang themselves.
Yep.
It's like their work schedule out there is insane. You know, a lot of them.
It's hot. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But they've also gone through almost the exact same thing we've went through. They're just several decades ahead of us. They've gone through a decade of no growth. Massive debt, can't own anything, massive work schedule, can't do anything.
Bro, have you played the Nintendo?
They already have Neets and Hikikomoris, or we call them incels, but they have the same Neets and Hikikomoris.
What do you think, hentai?
We call them incels.
All right, well, we got to start wrapping up. It's been a long one. I feel like we've solved nothing, but I feel like...
Were we ever going to solve anything?
No,
dude,
we're not.
You had me on, dude.
I want to commend you, you know, even though I've yelled at you a few times.
I love you, Spangle.
I love you, too.
I love all of the listeners, most of them. I love Mittens.
All right.
Especially.
Let's start wrapping up. Tad, final thoughts?
Final thoughts as far as the shootings? First of all, glad you're here. Glad you're sober.
God bless you. Glad you got clean.
God
bless.
As far as the shooting, I think you literally you have to look at it objectively and look at the numbers. And, I mean, it's tragic. That's what makes it so tragic is that it's not like a car wreck, you know, that can happen. It's just random as shit.
Yeah.
And another thought I had was Neil deGrasse Tyson. That did you see his tweet that he got bitched at?
Smash Mouth.
Basically said, Smash Mouth said, "Fuck you." He put out facts and basically
he literally put out the numbers.
Everyone was mad. Yeah,
yeah. And I just thought I was like, wow, if this isn't,
yeah,
I was like, how are you gonna that? You can't even have a conversation really about it because it's every side's so heated and
if you play with the mittens, you get burned, man.
They want to break it down into their side. It's just, I mean, at least here we can, you know, talk about it, and pretty much everybody's on the same page. But
I don't know. I don't think you're ever going to... There's a certain percentage of crazy people and shit's going to happen. You're not going to be able to control it. You can't control everything that's going to ever happen. The government's definitely not going to save your ass. So.
I know. I feel like that's really a shitty thing that people don't like to hear that is not a good answer, and it is, there may be nothing to solve this problem.
There's not. I don't think that shootings are random, like Mr. Western does. But
no, I'm not saying it's random. I'm saying there's just it's bound that something's going to happen. This guy was going to kill people regardless.
I think, you know, if the TA was consolidated, I think there would be a giant army of them.
The TA.
Tart Army.
Oh, it's a callback.
I think that there would be a giant group of people.
I'm over here trying to tell everybody that every problem cannot be solved and that there's no point in even trying. And you're over here talking about the Tart Army.
And I'm talking about the NPA.
All right. Final thoughts. Anyway. Final thoughts, Kyle.
You just skipped on.
I'm saving the best for second to last.
I just think that people need to think with a level head, because a lot of the times the media will like to use tragedy or, you know, something to get people more receptive to change. You know, people are more willing to sacrifice when they feel upset.
Yeah.
And you see it all the time that they use the deaths and the children and the pictures and the stories to get people to feel bad and to get sacrifice their own liberties. And I just think people need to, I understand these tragedies are, you know, they're tragedies, but we can't go crazy and write all kinds of legislation that would cause, you know, deaths on, you know, civilian law enforcement. It seems like to be what they want. 'Cause I mean, it's a big talking point. Just going after the guns, and I feel like there's going to be more shootings.
I think because it seems like the easy fix, but the problem is when you start talking about background checks, for instance. Well, most of the people who have committed mass shootings, a lot of the bigger shootings that you've heard about, they pass background checks. Like in the instance of, I think it was the Charleston shooter, he passed a background check. They just never sent the background check back, and so the gun store sold it to him, and they said, well, you're not going to get...
Look at the Parkland shooting. That guy was on 9 times or wherever they called the FBI and local police, and they still did nothing about it.
Right.
You know? So
there's always hand-to-hand dealing.
The system...
It's not even about the guns.
But the system, the solutions, the common-sense gun solutions, a lot of them that are being, you know, like... You must carry insurance if you own a weapon.
Or a license.
Or a license. Or a lot of this stuff is creating hardships for a gun owner that hasn't lost their guns in a boating accident. And those are not those are the safe people. Like, you know, the people that look and you go, well, we need gun laws because my kid could come over to your house and your kid could shoot my kid. And I go, that's a scenario that will never happen, because if I own a gun, I'm going to be extremely safe. I'm going to classes. I'm going to practice. That's the majority of gun owners. And you're creating laws because you think you have the ability to take away my rights. I'm sorry. My rights aren't up for discussion, and they're definitely not up for a vote. That's just
absolutely
the bottom line. And a lot of the solutions that people are just like, they think that if they scream loud enough and hard enough and vitriolically enough,
nobody wants
that
to argue
people
with them.
People will just relent. Yeah. And
the squeaky wheel gets the grease.
It's just not how it's going to work. I'm sorry.
I like the talking point, access to firearms. It's always the access. Mm-hmm.
So let's start talking about the things that most of America can agree on. Let's start identifying the warning signs of a kid like this Dayton shooter, for instance, or What are some ways, what are some problems in society that we can correct together? Because I'm not giving up my rights. It's just not up for discussion. Like, I'm not even going to debate it with you, because I have an inherent right to protect myself, my family, my community, and my property. And so it's not a solution. There's no such thing as a common sense solution when it comes to stealing rights. So let's actually, if I'm going to be intractable, let's actually talk about the things. There's a lot of, this is a complex solution. It's not just about the tool. They're using trucks and knives and things in places where they don't have guns.
More people are stabbed to death a year than shot.
Like, so it is a certain psychology or biology or sociological cause that is causing young men to join violent organizations of any nature. So let's figure out what that is. Let's research that. And we don't have that conversation. We don't even really know why these guys do that or what their mental, like, even after they've been in a facility like the Aurora shooter, he looks a little off, but you have no idea really what his state is or what caused him to do it. Who's doing research on that stuff? I'd love to do more, have more of a conversation about that, because I want to solve this problem. I want this to stop. I want there to be less violence. I'm a nonviolent person. I don't believe that violence is a tool to achieve social goals, like there's, or political goals. Like, violence is an absolute non-starter. Like, if you think that using violence is an acceptable tool,
you're already lost.
You've already lost. You've lost. You're an immoral person. And so how can we figure out how to create a system that actually solves this problem?
I would start by, like, not letting people incite violence on Twitter, because it's okay. Like, when the left does it, and I use that term very loosely,
right?
But it's okay. And, you know, when, like, keywords like extermination and I can't remember the guy's name.
Let's not talking pretend about, that violence is just the white a stronghold of Trump and the white supremacist movement. Like, Rand Paul just had a piece of his lung removed because a person on the left kicked the shit out of him. And then go look at the replies to Rand Paul about his announcement on it. See if that seems nonviolent and all those people. Like, violence is actually the default setting for human beings. Control and violence.
Paint everybody a fascist. That's okay to punch.
It was kind of funny how he was, like, making his yard trimmings pile up in that dude's lawn, though.
Well, it sounds like, but there's no reason for it.
It was Hank Hill versus Rand Paul.
Finish your thought, and then we're going to go to Tanner.
I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He's got, like, over 100,000 followers on Twitter. But just inciting, you know, calling Trump supporters, you know, racist. They're all racist.
Reza Aslan?
Yeah. And saying that they need to be exterminated. And that type of, you know, that type of verbiage out there, the crazy people that see that, they're going to feel emboldened. You know, there's someone else that feels like me.
And when their rules are enforced on one political side but not on the other, that has a galvanizing, mobilizing effect on the other side. And that's what I don't think that people who are in these big tech companies understand.
There's going to be blowback eventually.
Yeah. And so that's why you get people shooting up YouTube, like that crazy woman who got demonetized.
God, she was hot.
Stop. All right. Final thoughts, Tanner.
You know, thank you guys. You know, all one quarter of you that remember me, thank you. The three quarters that don't remember me, thank you for listening to me. Arvin 2020. There's my official endorsement. Thank you to Tad Western.
Literally the first endorsement of Arvin ever.
Thank you to Mr. Spangle, who let me on his show. Hell, I'll even thank Jeremiah. Thank you, Jeremiah.
You gotta kiss the boss hog ring. You gotta kiss it.
You know, you gotta kneel and kiss the boss hog ring. And it's been a good time. It's been a long time, but it's been good to be here with a clear head to actually get my feelings out. These shootings are absolutely ridiculous. I don't think that gun control is going to fix any of that. I think that if anything, it's going to make it worse. So, arm yourselves, arm your children. Arm everybody and train them to use the guns properly. And that's the only way I think that this can be fixed. That's my final thoughts, and thank you.
All right. Harry? I'm going to need you to turn on your mic, or what are you doing over there?
I don't know. He's a moving target, though.
Oh, I said I did, like, I gave my final spiel before you guys just kind of jumped in everything.
Oh, Harry was first?
Yeah, I kind of said everything, and then everybody just kind of, like, piled into that. Like, that's my final thought. That's what I did.
You even said Harry first.
Yeah, I know, right?
All right, then. All right. Thanks for joining us here on We Are Libertarians. Thank you, Tanner. It was great to see you here. Kyle, it's nice to meet you. Harry, always a pleasure for you not to be here. And Tad, it was great to see you as well. So
it's great seeing you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to go and subscribe to all of the We Are Libertarian podcasts. We appreciate you all so much, and we will talk to you soon.